The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Oh! There we go. And then it finishes with instruments, so you don't hear him say anything. Good evening, dear listener. A slow, gentle start to the show, I would say. You all right, Catherine?
Yeah, there we go. The headphones on the wrong way around.
Well, that will explain why you're hearing the end of the show first, you silly sausage. This is the Late Night Alternative. I'm Ian Lee. Catherine Boyle is there. We have Jay Foreman with us this evening. Good evening,
Hello,
Jay.
Ian Lee. How are you?
I'm good. It's nice to see you. We've been talking for the last 15 minutes. Comedian, performer, writer, musician, all of these kinds of things. There's a reason you're here, but we're in the middle of quite a geeky Beatles chat. Is that right, Kath?
Oh, yeah. And I'll just go to my happy place.
If you want to phone in and chat Beatles with us, 0344... 499-1000. There is kind of a reason to why Jay is here, and we will get to that in a minute. We're going to ask for some money off you as well. I hope you don't mind, dear listener. There is a great cause. Doesn't that sound cheesy? But there is actually a great cause, and there is a great way to donate money towards this great cause. We will get to that in a second. Have your phones and tablets and computers ready? Not much, a few quid, and you can pledge. What were we just talking about, Jay?
We were talking about the Beatles in some way.
In some way, but I can't remember what it was, and it seemed so important at the time.
Right, OK, so you were talking about Denny Lane, and then you moved on. First of all, you were talking about 15 minutes of the Beatles waiting to do their actual job,
okay,
and it being hilarious.
OK, I've got it. Time out.
You're in.
Time out.
OK.
So Tim Heidecker does this spoof cop show called Decker, where he gets kind of 60s and 70s pop stars to have minor roles in it. He's had a couple of the Beach Boys in it. And he had Denny Lane in an episode. Denny Lane from...
The Denny Lane.
But in the trailer for it, it was billed as, in tiny letters from, huge letters, Paul McCartney, tiny letters and wings, Denny Lane.
You see, Denny Lane should have known that was going to happen as soon as he decided to join a band that had Paul McCartney in it. He knew that was going to happen for the rest of his life.
We had Denny Lane on the show, and a lovely man, yeah. Really, really nice guy. And I said to him, I said to him, thinking the answer would be, yeah, he did it all the time. I said, did Paul ever, during those 10 years you were in Wings, did Paul ever just sit at the piano and go, Denny Lane? And he went, oh, no, you never did that. I never thought of that, actually. You never thought that your name, Denny Lane, sounds exactly like Penny Lane?
I would have thought that's how he got the job.
You would think so, wouldn't it? Tell us why you are here, what it is you are doing. You're doing a thing with Mark Watson.
I am.
I love Mark Watson. I think he's one of this country's funniest people. I think
he's
wonderful.
Great, isn't he? So Mark Watson, every few years or so, he does his marathon show where he will do, this year it's 26.2 hours straight comedy.
Yeah.
And he's been doing this for years. And what he does every time he does this show is he asks comedians to come forward and attempt some sort of record-breaking thing, some sort of marathon thing.
Right.
So there's a comedian this year who's attempting to teach himself French in 24 hours. And I've decided to volunteer my services. I'm going to be setting myself a challenge this year in one day to play on the guitar and sing every Beatles song ever.
From memory. You're not doing the book. You've not got the book.
No chord books, no lyric sheets. All just my memory.
You're doing... Now, listen, you can bid on songs. Me and Catherine have bought a song for you, dear listener. We have bought Revolution Number 9.
I knew somebody would.
Well, we had to. I mean, we had to. We played that on air.
Really?
Yeah, we played it, and we added stuff on top of it. Imagine...
Did anybody notice?
No, I don't think they did. No one listened. It'll be great if... Listen, you can go on and if you want a bit of... What is the charity, first of all? Let's get that.
The charity is Dementia Revolution.
Okay.
And is a combination of two dementia charities who are joining forces, and they are one of the sponsors for the London Marathon this year.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. And this is... And I know that you have personal... As most people do, unfortunately, these days, you've got personal...
Most people do, yeah. It was my grandpa had Alzheimer's for the last 10 years of his life, and it was really hard for the whole family, especially for my grandma. So it's a cause quite close to my heart, so I'm glad to be able to raise money for it.
Yeah, and it's not a rarity, unfortunately. My granddad had it. I'm sure most of the listeners, it will have cropped up somewhere in their life. People can go and buy or bid on Beatles songs for you to perform on the day.
Yes, so on my website there is a list of all 186 Beatles songs in alphabetical order, and next to it you can click and put your name.
So the website is Jay Foreman, J-A-Y Foreman, F-O-R-E-M-A-N.co.uk. jayforeman.co.uk. You click on there, there's a list of the songs. Here's some of the songs we've got available. Birthday is available.
No one's taken birthday.
No one's taken birthday. I mean, whenever people say the Beatles never did a bad song, I point them to Blue Jay Way.
I once did a podcast where I had to try and choose what was my least favourite Beatles song. Yeah. The three of us were arguing which is the worst song.
Go on.
I nominated Don't Pass Me By.
Oh, no.
Because, so Ringo only wrote two songs on his own for the whole Beatles career. Octopus's Garden, lots of people love. I suspect that he had a lot of help for George on that one. I think George might have been responsible for everything that made that song palatable.
Oh, if you watch Let It Be, you see George pretty much writing it for him.
Yeah, and because George is such a nice guy, he doesn't want to swoop in there and get credit because, you know, he's got enough money. But the only time Ringo actually did a song all on his own, it was Don't Pass Me By. I've talked about this before, but basically, this is the one opportunity he has to give himself a fantastic drum part, a drum solo even.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a drum kit falling down the stairs.
Yeah.
And there's no guitars, which is unusual for a Beatles song. And have you ever listened to and really thought about the lyrics of Don't Pass Me By?
You were in a car crash and you lost your hair.
Yeah, that's going to take some explaining.
But also, what's great about Don't Pass Me By is, I think it came out on the White Album, which was 68.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an interview from 1964 where Ringo's saying, well, I'm writing a song called Don't Pass Me By and I think it's going to be great. It took him 4 years to write You Were in a Car Crash and You Lost Your Hair.
I like to imagine that he wrote it sort of one line at a time. He was doing it in chronological order. He got as far as the first line in 1964, finally finished it in time for the White Album.
There are some great songs still available. Cry Baby, Cry. Dear Prudence, I mean, these are masterpieces.
I should stress that if your favourite song has gone, you can still sponsor without picking a song.
Oh, can you?
Oh, yes.
Well, hang on a minute. Pick a song you like. Just because your favourite one's gone, I don't know, pick your second favourite song, guys.
I'm hoping...
You're trying to do this so that you don't get all of the songs covered and you can finish in 45 minutes.
Well, I have to play all 186 songs, whether they're sponsored or not.
Uh-oh.
But if they are sponsored, it means that before I start playing, I go, and this one here is sponsored by... I look down at my sheet and say, Ian Lee. And then I sing the song.
Ray has called in. Let's see what Ray's got for us. Good evening, Ray.
Good evening. I'm so glad you've got Jay on your show because...
he owes you money.
I watch his YouTube channel, which is fantastic.
Oh,
thank you, Ray.
He does this song where he names all the tube stations on the underground network, and it's terrific.
Oh, yeah, thanks for reminding me, Ray. Yeah, I've got a song where I sing every tube station. Forgot to mention that. I seem to have this thing about completing lists.
That should have been your opening gambit. By the way, before we talk about the Beatles, you know my tube station song. That really is.
What I'm noticing about you, Jay, is that you really like remembering stuff.
That's the theme I seem to be setting, yeah. I'm going to trap myself, and the next thing I do is also going to have to be a feat of memory.
Okay, so you're a fan of Jay's,
yeah.
Ray. Oh,
yes.
Okay, yeah. Anything else you want to...
Well, okay. I mean, an easier song for him to do, if not that, is Bim Bim Bim.
What's Bim Bim Bim?
This is one of the songs from my comedy set, because I sing funny songs, and Bim 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 is an original composition. It's only about 30 seconds.
Can we hear it? You have a guitar here by coincidence. Here we
go. I thought I was going to play Beatles songs, but here is a rendition of my song called Bim Bim Bim.
Here we go.
Bim 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 bim. Second verse, same as the first. Bim 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 bim. Third verse, same as the first and the second. Bim 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 bim.
Thanks for this, Ray.
Bim 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 bim. Fourth verse, similar to the first, second and third. Bim 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 bom. Bim 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 bom. Bim 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 bom. Fifth verse, completely different from the first, second, third, and fourth. And then I held her in my arms for the last time. Sixth verse, same as the first, second, and third. Bim, 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 the end.
Fantastic.
Well, listening to Talk Radio UK.
Thank you very much, Ray. I made the mistake. JJ Foreman is here with us. jforeman.co.uk if you want to go and bid on those Beatles songs. And it can be, look, if you've got a lot of money, put a lot of money in. If you've got a few quid, just put a few quid in. I'm guessing a few quid is okay.
Okay. You can put pennies in if you like.
Oh, don't put pennies
but
in.
Don't.
Put a minimum of maybe 200 pennies. But go on then. If you see a song, just put a few quid in. I made the mistake at the start of that rather silly song of making eye contact with you and then having to keep that eye contact for the whole thing. I didn't want to break it because I didn't want to let you down. I didn't want to let me down. I have put off live in concert. I've had dirty looks from both Prince and Neil Diamond.
Oh, really? Who made you feel the worst?
Oh, Diamond did. Diamond crushed me. Because I was very... The Prince was... I was, like, in the fourth row for a Prince concert at the O2. Diamond, I accepted an invitation I've never accepted before or since. I went to one of those, an audience with, at ITV. And I was in the second row, and Neil Diamond singing Cracklin' Rosie. And I start blasting out Cracklin' Rosie. And he looks at me as if to say, shut up. I am singing this. I am Neil Diamond. When is this... So when is this whole extravaganza happening?
The event starts on the 27th of February in the Pleasance, London. But because it's a 24-hour event, my bit doesn't start until the 28th in the morning.
Oh.
And my aim is to finish all 186 Beatles songs before the show finishes at 9 p.m. on the 28th.
Oh, OK, right. I was going to say, if we were on air, we'd nip in and have some of it. Right, OK. I'm just... Can I... I don't know how to do this, right? Because you're going to have to earn your keep. How... I was going to... I'm going to ask the question that popped in my head, even though it's rude.
I'm looking forward to this.
How good are you? I'm just going to... Can I just throw, like, a title at you?
Please do, yeah.
And you go for it. And then when we get bored, can Kath then throw a title at you? And then you... Can we do that?
We can do this as long as you like. I mean, if I'm going to be trained up for this exercise, I'm supposed to know every single Beatles song, all the lyrics, all the little twiddly bits on the guitar. So, I'm ready if you are.
Okay, you've got a good list of Beatles songs.
Yeah.
Do you want to start?
Okay.
Throw one at him.
Don't let me down.
Nobody ever loved me like she did. Ooh, she does me. Yes, yeah, she does.
Dr. Robert.
Be my friend, I said.
Well, this is the most fun!
Ain't all night, he'll be there any time at all, Dr. Robert.
And your bird can sing.
Doctor, tell me that you got everything you want. And your bird can sing, but you don't get me.
Can we keep him?
This is the whole show.
You don't get me.
Julia.
Julia.
Oh, he's good.
Sleeping. Oh. Sleeping something.
Sleeping something?
Ocean child calls me. So
go on.
Back in the USSR.
Being around for something could be your AC. Didn't get to bed last night.
I don't know why it's so
all
funny.
The way the paper bag was on my... Have you ever seen, by the way, there's a trick I do in my live show where I get the audience to shout out a song and I sing it where the syllables are delayed by one. So I'll just explain this.
Basically,
this is insane. This is a trick I do in my live set where I'll give you an example. You know the song that goes, doe, a deer, a female deer,
Ray.
So if I sing that song but I start singing it one syllable delayed behind the tune, it sounds like this.
Here we go.
Doe, a deer, a female deer, Ray, a drop of golden sun, me a name I call myself, far a long, long way to.
Oh, God.
And so on and so on. But the challenge is if I can do that to any song you throw at me, so we might as well try a Beatles song.
Paperback writer, please.
Dear, dear Sora, madam, will you read my book? It took me years to write, will you take
it? Sounds like me playing now.
My head.
Thank you.
It really hurts.
So I've got to avoid the temptation to do that syllables trick when I'm trying to be serious and raise money for charity.
So you're going to do all of the songs. We're going to let you have a break for a sec, just for a second. You're going to do all of the Beatles songs. How many is it?
186. I got that number from... Have you ever seen a book called Revolution in the Head?
Oh, yes.
It's a great book, isn't it? So it is a list of every Beatles song ever recorded. And it's helpfully numbered 1 to 186 in the order that they were recorded. And that's the order I'll be playing it in, by the way.
So you're not doing it alphabetical?
No, I'm not.
Okay, and you're not doing bootlegs?
Nope.
So no shouting out Commonwealth or What a Shame, Mary Jane, none of that?
None of that, no. Nothing from the anthology, no covers either, which is actually a pity because it means I don't get to do Twist and Shout or Money. That's what I want. So
what's your encore?
Well, if I've still got the fingers for it, if my fingers aren't bleeding and my throat hasn't jumped out of my mouth, then I'll be happy to do an encore.
Jay, let's have a little break and then we'll come back. Go and get pen and paper, dear listener, because honestly, I don't know why I find this so funny, but it's wonderful. If you want to phone up and have a word with Jay, you're very welcome to 0344 499 1000. He is working this evening. He is, we are making him sweat. Me and Kath have chucked in a few quid. It's got to be worth it. It's for dementia, Alzheimer charities. I will give the link to go to his page so you can pledge on a song if you want. I'll do that in a second. This is the Late Night Alternative on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I've been lifting it.
you keep it down. We can hear it. It's all good. We've got Jay Foreman with us, a comedian, performer, singer, songwriter.
Rememberer.
Mm-hmm. We were trying to... I nearly remembered the name of the remembering guy, Dominic.
Yes.
Somebody. Do you remember the remembering guy?
Mr. Memory.
So he used to go on TV and flip a pack of cards and then recite it back.
Yes. We were talking about him. He's quite tall, had a moustache. And we couldn't remember his name the other day. And we
How ironic.
I know. And we try and avoid Googling stuff on this show.
And I have emailed him in the past.
Did he remember to reply?
He replied and said, no, thank you.
He said, get knotted. I'm more than just memory. I can name colours as well. No one asks me for my colour act. No one asks for that. So Jay is doing a performance as part of Mark Watson. Well, tell me the full name of the Mark Watson's
26.2-hour comedy marathon.
Jesus, that guy's insane.
He's done this loads of times. He used to do, at the Edinburgh Fringe, he'd do a 24-hour show. And despite the fact that that would ruin him every time, he's now decided to do it regularly, and this time for it to be 26.2 hours. Apparently because that makes it more like a marathon.
More like a marathon. I love Mark Watson so much. Partly because I was going through a bit of a tough time recently, and I don't know him. I've met him a couple of times, like years ago, and he just sent me a little DM on Twitter saying, hang in there, man, it'll be all right, which I thought was wonderful in this horrible, vacuous business. I don't know why I've gone all camp tonight, but I'm enjoying it. I'm sticking with it. I think this could be the new me. But also, he's funny, man.
He's great,
He's so funny. He's just brilliant. He does a wonderful show on Radio 4. Is he still doing that? They always seem to play the show on Radio 4. And I don't know if they're new or old.
If it's not on Radio 4, it's bound to be on Radio 4 Extra.
Yeah, they're always playing. And I haven't seen him do stand-up, actually, probably, God, for maybe 10, 12 years. But he's just funny. So he's doing that. Are there tickets still available for that, if people...
Oh, I don't know. But if you go to the website for The Pleasance, which is pleasance.co.uk, then they should let you know. And most of the people that attend these shows, they go every year. They go every time. Because it's not so much a comedy show as like a cult thing.
And do they stay for the whole thing or do they do it in shifts?
You're allowed to leave, but not for more than an hour. Otherwise, they'll give your ticket to someone else. Apparently, most people that turn up to those shows, they do stay for the whole thing.
Wow.
They bring, you know, packed lunches and sleeping bags.
And wear nappies. So you can go for an hour. Go out for an hour and come back in having eaten something else.
Here's the thing, if you're in there for like 5 hours and stay there, Dredge, we'll come to you in a second. You like Dredge, he's a nice guy. But you stay there for like 4 or 5 hours, and so you're getting a little bit high from it. It's a little bit becomes a slightly psychedelic experience because you're immersed in this thing. And then you go out in the real world for like an hour. I don't know if I'd want to go back in because. I'd feel a bit dirty.
That's one of the reasons I'm there. If people get bored of what's happening on the main stage, they can pop to the room round the corner where I'm going to be doing my Beatles thing for approximately 9.5 hours.
Approximately.
And I'm hoping that when people come to watch me for a bit, they'll be joining in and singing along, harmonising.
Oh, I see. You're relying on the audience to fill in the blanks.
How are you going to adapt to normal society after that?
I don't know. I think by the end of it, my worry is that after 9.5 hours, I'm going to be sick of the Beatles. I've never been that before, but I might be after that.
If you want to sponsor a song, pledge a song, buy a song, whatever you want to call it, if you go to Jay Foreman, J-A-Y Foreman, foreman.co.uk, and it explains everything, and then you can scroll down and there's a list of songs that are available. For example, A Lot of the Eyes, I'll Get You, I'm a Loser, I'm down, I'm Happy Just to Dance with You, they're available. You then go back up to the top and click on the Virgin Money Giving thing and donate, and it's for Alzheimer's and dementia charities. It's all in good cause. It's all legit, guys, is what I'm trying to say. He is legit. He will do this. The money will go somewhere good.
Thanks, guys. You're doing my job for me.
It's a pleasure, man. Honestly, you're going to work hard in a second. Dredge, you're through to Jay.
So you're doing all these songs just on an acoustic guitar?
That's right. It's going to be just me and a guitar and probably the audience joining in and clapping.
Dredge sounds disappointed.
What do you want him to do? One man band?
I've got a prediction of the question you're about to ask me.
How are you going to do the end of Day in the Life?
Oh, he was holding up 9 fingers for Revolution Number 9. Our song, Catherine. It will forever be our song, darling.
Well,
can you play the end of Day in the Life?
Do you mean the bit that goes, shh, is it never crossing any? Oh, that one.
No, you know the bit that goes...
You know Day in the Life.
Oh, you mean the really long note that goes...
Yeah, I was
thinking keep quiet. Before
Shush. That. Quiet, please. Not that bit.
Well, hang on, so you don't mean the long note at the end. You don't
mean the orchestral
build-up. Orgasm.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Oh, you mean that bit? That, like, I mean, okay, let me work it out. So,
love to turn that's it.
That's as close as I can get because I haven't got an orchestra. Will that do?
That will do.
You do sound disappointed. It's got to be honest, Rach. You sound disappointed. Yes, he didn't go up for the count of 21 or however long it is. I was going to be Mal Evans there going, 1, 2. But come on, man. He's doing his best.
Yeah, you're doing very well. Very, 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 very well.
What do you want, Dredge? What more do you want from the man? He's remembering hundreds of songs.
I know. It's incredible. It's brilliant, yeah.
Quick, Dredge, just say a song off the top of your head so you can play it.
Okay, the worst Beatles song, Don't Bother Me.
Since she's been gone, I want no one to talk to me. It's not to blame, it's just the same, it's plain to see. Don't bother me.
That's a great song.
Well,
it's a throwaway, but what? That's a lovely little jaunty dance number.
It was George Harrison just about finding his way. Although his second song, yes. You Like Me Too Much, basically is that spawned the career of the Coral.
Okay. Oh, God. Unlucky. Here's a question we always do, and I can never remember the answer to it. Dredge, maybe you'll remember the answer. Jay will work it out because Jay's brain is like a computer.
Is it four?
No. What in order of song? So in order of songs released by the Beatles as we would have heard them.
Yes.
What was the first song to not feature the title in the lyrics?
Oh, that's a good question, isn't it?
Isn't it a good question? Don't you keep
going, Dredge? Are you quizzing me?
I'm quizzing you.
And you know the answer, and you want to see if I can get it.
I can never remember. We
I'm
going to
try and have
a lot.
Right, if I had a bit longer, I'd get it right. But is it Love You Too from Revolver?
I think it might be.
Because if it is, do I get some sort of a prize?
Yeah, you get Dredge. you get Dredge as your slave. It is Revolver. It is Revolver, and I can't remember.
If it's Revolver, I think I got it right.
Tomorrow Never Knows.
Ah, but Tomorrow Never Knows
comes after.
It does.
Yeah, you. It's Love You Too. But yes, what?
Hooray!
This guy's great. This guy knows his onions and his Beatles.
Most of my Beatles knowledge comes from that book, Revolution in the Head, which has all of those songs in order.
Have you read the Mark Lewisohn book that's like 1,200 pages long and only goes up to 1962?
No, but I keep noticing that every time there's a footnote in Revolution in the Head or a Wikipedia article about the Beatles or any conversation about the Beatles, they refer to this Mark Lewisohn book.
Book,
I feel like I've read it already.
It's some book. Rachel Lichtman, who is a kind of a satirist that I quite like. I mean, when the book came out, she tweeted, I'm on page 896. I don't know anything about the Beatles, but I know that Ringo's grandfather stole a hat once. It's that detailed. Anything else, Dredge, before I cut you off?
Have you ever seen the...
I was too trigger-happy, Dredge. I apologise. Call back in. Simon is on the line. Good evening, Simon.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. What you got for us?
I've got a general question. I want some advice, but if it's the wrong time, I don't mind calling back later.
Is it advice about Beatles records?
No.
Is it advice about remembering stuff?
No.
Maybe could you call back after 11? Maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Is that all right? Are you okay? You sound a bit down. You okay?
I just need. Well, yeah, I'm all right. I just want to pick your brains and the listener's brains, hopefully.
Give us a little hint as to what it's about to keep the listener tempted.
It's about my cat.
We're in. We'll speak to you after 11. Speak to you. The big, big supporter of cats on this show. Big supporter of cats. Although my three. I forgot one of my cats. Then look at that. Isn't that? I mean, my two kittens are getting on my nerves. It's ever so slightly.
Well, and you encouraged one to gouge me earlier on.
Yes,
so.
I did. Quick, Kath, name a Beatles song.
Norwegian Wood.
I once had a girl, or should I say, she once had me.
The Inner Light.
Without looking out of your door, I can
while my guitar gently weeps.
Catch you all. See the love there that's sleeping.
You won't see me.
When I call, you
this
are
is the best. I want to own him.
My lights have changed. I have had
the words.
Enough. Now that I know what I feel must be right, I'm here to show everybody the light. Give the word a chance to say.
Savoy truffle.
Korean tangerine.
We're being mean and he's doing it. Go on, two more.
Strawberry fields.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see.
Everybody's got something to hide except for me and my monkey.
Come on. Take it easy.
I can't breathe.
Take it easy. Everybody's got something to hide. And so on and so on.
Oh, mate, I'm good. Put so your guitar good. Down. You've earned your keep tonight.
Thank you.
We bullied you a little bit there. That was great.
So good.
Can you come back every night and just let us shout Beatles songs at you for 10 minutes, please?
Whenever you like.
It'd be helpful. JAYFOREMAN.co.uk. Go and have a look at the songs. There's loads of Beatles songs still left. Go and put your bid in. Me and Kath have put a bid in on Revolution Number 9, which is mean. It's mean, but we chuckled when we did it. We were sat there giggling.
I'm looking forward to that one because I do have a plan how I'm going to play it, but I don't want to spoil it until the day.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I saw someone asking as well on Twitter, are you going to stream it live? Is there a Periscope thing going on?
I definitely want to because there's a lot of people who are interested in it, but they can't make it to London to watch the show.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look into it. Okay. I'm hoping it's a simple case of me bringing my laptop along and pressing the stream button.
Yeah.
I will make it happen somehow.
Periscope on a mobile phone, dead easy. Just put it on a tripod, point it at you.
I could do, but then how will I check Twitter during the show?
Oh! Mate, let us know what you sort out, and we'll give it a plug. And on Twitter, you are
at Jay Foreman.
Beautiful, there you go, Jay. So nice to meet you, man.
Thank you.
So much. We'll get you back in at some point. The show continues. 03444991000. This is the Late Night Alternative on Talk Radio.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
The seasons go.
Here we go. Loving Bobby Gentry at the moment, guys. Loving Bobby Gentry. I mean, what a voice. What a lady. Great times. Let's just take it. Yes, Line 2, you're on the wireless.
I'm on the wireless, crikey.
Oh, it's this guy who always sounds like he's up to something very, very naughty, wearing a velvet glove. Having a PW.
I beg your pardon.
A posh PW. One.
Just one moment. I need to turn the radio down. I wasn't expecting to go on air straight away.
This is how it happens sometimes. Sometimes this is how it happens.
Got Lawrence unawares.
Yes. He has to go to the East Wing.
Wearing leather slippers, you know it.
And that's all.
The elation awaits. Sorry about that.
That's all right, Lawrence. Nice to talk to you, mate. What you got for us tonight?
That's a nice song you're playing there. What's it called?
Bobby Gentry, Seasons Come, Seasons Go. Just heard it for the first time tonight. I love it.
Very sort of early Moody Blues. You know,
I don't know that much about the Moody Blues. I know Go Now, which is like one of their early hits of Denny Lane. But then I know that very shortly after that, they changed radically and became, I don't want to say proggy, but certainly became more sweeping in their music, but I don't know much about them. I don't know, what's the big album? Days of Future Past, is that what it's called?
Something like that.
Yes, I don't know it.
I did go through a phase. Didn't last very long.
I think I'd like them if I got into them, but I just haven't. I haven't found the time yet. I haven't found the time.
You have that kind of a mixture of music and poetry and a lot of imagery going on.
Nights and Wired Sutton.
Is that one, of course.
All having a posh wave at the sky. Lawrence, what can we do for you this evening?
Well, that was it, really.
The Moody Blues.
Say hello, and I'll for details of that song. And
Bobby Gentry. I'm starting to get into Bobby Gentry a lot. I listened to a really good podcast about her. It's part of the Cocaine and Rhinestones podcast series. And there's an episode. I find them all a little bit dry, but there was a really nice one about Bobby Gentry, actually, which kind of gave her story. And I didn't know it. And I found that one really interesting. So I would recommend listening to that if you want to get a little bit of the old the background informaziano.
I'm rather partial to that sort of sound, you know, from the late 60s of psychedelia.
She's kind of sort of swampy and a bit Oh, what was the... Oh. She did a great... She did an album with Glen Campbell. What was the song I heard her singing with... She, obviously... Oh, listen, hang on, listen to this, listen to this. Listen to this is great. I mean, hang on. Oh, not this, this is an advert for banking. Okay. Hang on, this is not great. This is the antithesis. Listen to this, this is great. Glen Campbell and Bobby Gentry, here we go.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk.
What's interesting is she's singing the lower part, it's great.
That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch.
Hmm. Yeah?
Do you know what that reminds me of?
Go on.
That song by Nielsen, Everybody's Talking At Me.
Everybody's talking at me.
Sort of, you know.
Nielsen's biggest hit, and he didn't write it. But it's a similar vibe. Yeah. They also did, they also had a big hit with, Oh, hang on, let me try this one. Let me try. No, not this one. Listen to this. This is stunning. Listen to this. This is what it's all about. This is what life's about. This is it. Listen.
Oh. I bless the day I found you. I want to stay around you, and so I beg you, let it be me.
Isn't it? That's what life's about. That is got everyone going by the Bobby Gentry and Glen Campbell album. Yeah. It's a masterpiece.
Could be from the B side of Bright Eyes.
Could be. Bright Eyes was a great song. What are you talking about, Lawrence?
It's the oboe, you see.
It's the oboe. All right, hey, listen, nice one, Lawrence. Thanks for calling, man.
Right, thanks.
Take care, bye-bye. What a nice guy. I like Lawrence. Mysterious.
Smooth.
A lot of people, you kind of got an idea of what's going on. Lawrence got no idea, and I like it. Withheld number. Beautiful.
You know he's wearing a smoking jacket.
Yeah.
And a cravat.
And nothing else. let's try Andy. Good evening, Andy.
Oh, hi, Ian and Catherine. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm not a miserable person, but it does take quite a lot to make me laugh. And in a nice way, you make me laugh.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Can I just also say I find you very engaging as a broadcaster.
Are you talking to me or Catherine? To you.
Say again?
Wait, are you talking to me or Catherine?
Both of you.
Oh, as a broadcaster, we have become one.
Broadcasters.
That's okay. Well, thank you, man. That means a lot.
I don't want to get too deep, but I think you're also a very strong person. And I'll give you an example. I called you just before Christmas,
yeah.
And I was unaware it was live to air.
Oh.
Yeah.
sorry.
came on, and you just kindly said to me, hi, Andy. How are you? And I'd just lost my dad. And I broke down on air. And you were so genuinely sympathetic with me.
Yes, man.
You speak to so many people, if you can remember that.
I do. Do you know, I remember very little. I do remember that. Yes, I do remember that, because we were having a little bit of fun and you came on at a very vulnerable time. Yeah.
I just went. But just going back to you being a strong person, Ian, if you don't mind me saying, you've got an honesty that bears that out. You're just honest and open, and that makes you a strong person. And before I start bubbling again, I'd just like to say two things to say, if that's okay.
Yeah, go on.
My mum always said to me, nothing's ever as bad as you think it's going to be, and that's true.
Yeah.
My lovely dad used to say to me, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. Just be careful it's not a freight train.
Jesus. Yeah.
So they balanced each other out, is what you're saying.
You're very kind. I'm not sure. I would suggest I am a very weak person. But I appreciate your kind words. How are you doing? How are you doing now?
It's kind of true. I'm doing okay now. It's been a very, very difficult time. I was very close to my dad, but he was always a very, very funny man. Can I just tell you one little tale about him?
Please do. I'd love to know more about him. Go on.
He was He was in a residential rest home for the last 6 years,
yeah.
And he suffered with something called Kersikoff syndrome, yeah, which meant that because of alcohol abuse, he'd only got like a 5-minute memory.
Aye.
And I was with him shortly after he arrived in the nursing home. I saw him whenever I could. I was working for an airline at the time, so I was away a lot. And one day I was there, in the first 6 weeks he'd been there, and a lady knocked on the door at 11 o'clock
yeah.
in the morning. My dad said, come in, and the lovely lady walked in, and she'd got a tea trolley with cakes and biscuits and coffee on.
You don't see tea trolleys anymore. You don't see a good old tea trolley with those big silver tea urns and the cakes and the...
No.
Oh, beautiful. Lovely.
And what's happened to the fondant fancies?
Oh, the fondant fancy. The finest of all the cakes seems to have disappeared. Kids these days, they're too busy smoking crack.
Yeah.
They still do, and they're just a lot smaller.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they are. I personally, I haven't seen the Gypsy Cream for about 20 years.
Can't call them Gypsy Creams anymore. They're Traveller's Creams.
Oh, Traveller's Creams. Sorry, I fell into that one, didn't I?
Yes, they're Traveller's Creams. Anyway, yes, go on. So I'm assuming it's a lady bringing around a tea trolley, yeah?
So she said to my father, Richard, would you like a cup of coffee? He said, oh, yeah, it'd be lovely, thank you. And he said... to the lady, would you like to get my son one as well? And I said, no, Dad, I'm okay, thanks. So then she said, would you like some biscuits, Richard? Would you like some digestive biscuits, which were his favourite? So he had his coffee and his digestive biscuits. He thanked her and she left. And when she shut the door, he turned to me and he said, Andrew, I just can't believe that. They've brought me coffee and biscuits. How nice is that?
Oh. So,
well, when I was leaving, I went to find the lady with the tea trolley, and I told her that. And she said, he has his coffee and biscuits every day at 11 o'clock.
Oh, and he didn't remember. But do you know what? That's kind of magic, isn't it?
Yes, it is magic. And
That simple pleasure is new and fresh every single day at 11 o'clock.
And she knows exactly what he likes.
Yeah. Oh, that's
exactly
magic.
Right. not on a maudlin note, but the funeral director told me that when my dad was taken to the place of rest, the nursing care and the residential care people and the care workers formed a guard of honour for him.
That's beautiful.
It was just, yes, it
that's
is. Yeah,
aren't there nice people out there?
Oh, there's some great. And do you know what? For what they're paid.
Yeah. Oh God, they get it's ridiculous. The work that carers in care homes and those that visit people in their home, it's shocking how little we give them. It's a crime.
Yeah. My grandma's carers came to the funeral, and and they were as upset
same,
as we were.
Yeah.
Catherine, same. Yeah. It's just lovely. I'm sorry, I haven't got any really amusing anecdotes.
No, you have. What you've got is a really charming human anecdote, which I feel privileged that you shared a little bit of your dad with us tonight, Andy. So thank you, man.
Well, you were lovely to me, and thank you very much, Ian.
Okay, take care, brother. I appreciate that. I'm reminded, I meant to say this the other day. Do you remember before Christmas, we had a guy, David, call up, whose wife, Sarah, but spelt Sarah, had died that day.
Yes.
She died that
and
day.
And had a little girl. A
little girl called Freya. And it was incredible. It was incredible. He sent me this a while ago, but I wasn't feeling great. He sent me this on the 3rd, and he'd heard that I wasn't feeling great. And he sent me, and I watched it. He said, let me read this out, because I gave him my phone number. Hi, Ian, you gave me your number before Christmas. I called your show the day my wife Sarah died, age 34, leaving me with my daughter Freya. I'm really sorry to intrude, but I wanted to share this with you. It's my introduction at Sarah's celebration of life ceremony. What great, you know, terribly sad, tragic thing, but what a great title, a ceremony of life, celebration of life. I've been catching up on the pods and he'd been having after. If I can do anything, let me know. And he sent me this 6.5-minute video of him. Someone's filmed on their mobile phone of him holding Freya.
Oh.
And she's obviously jiggling about. I think she's like 2 or something, isn't she? 3. 3 probably. You know, so he has to put her down, and he does this lovely introduction that they're going to have a celebration of his wife's, who's passed away, life. And he does like a little speech and he says, look, we're going to play music and we've got some food and stuff. If at any point someone wants to come up, oh, you're welling up, sorry, look. If at any point anyone wants to come up, we're just going to dip the music. You just say a few words and there's no pressure. And if you don't do it, that's cool. But this is an opportunity just to say what we loved about her. Whoa, flipping heck. I'd never heard of anything like that. I've been to wakes. This is not a wake. And this is something very, very special. But, what was special about it for me was that he had shared it to me. And do you know what? I've not got back to him, and I will get back to him tomorrow because I've not been feeling great. But that he shared it with me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest. There was 20% of me that thought maybe that call was not a genuine call. I questioned it.
Only because, what are the odds that someone would ring us first?
Yeah.
Before everyone else.
And I did question it, and of course, I feel terrible for questioning it. So I'm going to send David a little text tomorrow.
But
I thought that was lovely for him to share.
That just reminded me of my friend Nikki. She lost her husband. He had a very rare form of brain cancer. And she had this celebration of life and with a funeral involved in the woods. And everyone brought a picnic. Yeah. And when they told me about it, I thought, oh, God, this is a bit hippy-dippy.
Yeah.
It was beautiful, right? And once the funeral part of it was over, and it was a humanist ceremony, so there was there was no praying or anything like that. It was all stories bringing him to life, really, different aspects of him. Stories from when he was a kid, stories from work. He was a Radio 4 announcer. And so there were some quite famous people there telling stories about him and stuff, and what a professional he was, but how funny he was. And that's what came across. And also the fact that they were just that kind of couple that makes everyone else feel like the ideal is possible. You know, they were best friends, and it was just such a sad, sad thing. But their children were there. And at the end of the ceremony, they said, you know what, the best thing you could do for us as a family, because I know everyone wants to do something. Can you play rounders with the kids?
Oh, yes,
everyone
mate.
Sat around till it went dark. They played with the kids. The kids knew that they were being looked after by everyone there. There must have been about 200 people there. And the kids didn't sit down the whole time.
Beautiful.
It was the most glorious thing. I didn't know him, but I wished I had.
Yeah. Death's going to happen to all of us, right? And something like that is a beautiful way to kind of end it for the people that are still alive. I phoned up. We talked about Dennis from Dunstable. I will come to you in a minute, Carol, I promise. After the break, phone up Dennis from Dunstable, who passed away. Yeah. 95, I think, 96, can't remember.
We thought he'd gone quiet.
Yeah, and I phoned up his grandson today, Simon, and a grandson, probably the same age as me, a bit younger, actually. And I had a chat with him and just said, I just wanted to say, you know, me and Kath, you know, you're aware your granddad used to call us a lot. And I just want to say he was a gentleman. And I shared a couple of funny stories with him that he may not have been aware of. And
you tell him about when we took him to see that dirty film.
Of course I did. Of course I did. It was hilarious. And we had a good old laugh about Dennis. And here's the thing that he was falling over quite a bit. And he was in the last month or so, he was in a hospice. And I was thinking, oh, shit.
I wish I'd have known.
Shit. I should have chased it up, and we didn't follow our instinct of chasing it up. We just assumed that we passed away. And I was thinking, shit. Should have gone and sat with him for an hour. Should have done it. And I was so annoyed. Anyway, you know, you can't build your life on shoulds and would-haves and stuff like that. But the funeral's, I think, probably going to be about 3 weeks' time. I've said to him, look, if there's room, me and Kath, and I haven't got the kids, me and Kath would love to come. So surely that would be cool. I suspect Justin will come along as well. I'm sure Justin will come, looking like a geezer. It's something outrageous. But it was just, it was nice to speak to Simon and his grandson and just, you know, chat for 10 minutes about his granddad, you know, and what a nice person he was. And I guess that's the best we can hope for. If when we die, if some people share some nice stories about us, that's it.
Yeah.
Isn't it? That's immortality.
The thing that really breaks my heart at the moment, there's been quite a few stories about sort of ex-servicemen in particular, but older people who died in care homes on their own.
Yes.
And they kind of put a call out, don't they, and say, can anyone come to the funeral? And they get loads of people because there were some brilliant, kind people out there, but it just feels like such a shame that he didn't get a couple of people going to see him when he was alive, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, such is life. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio,
the best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Hello, New York. Hello, Missouri. What?
Here we go. Yes, yes, yes. I forget about Hedwig and the Angry Inch. I forget about it. And then I remember it like maybe every 2 or 3 years. It suddenly just pops into my head. I've got no idea why it popped into my head today. Have you never seen? I've never seen the live version. I want to see the live version. That's what I want to see, the live version. But the movie is incredible. It's about this transsexual who is born in East Berlin, but kind of gets, if I remember it correctly, gets smuggled over to West Germany by an American like corporal or something who pays for the operation, the transitioning operation, and it goes wrong. And so Hedwig lives, you know, identifies as a woman, but has still has an inch penis, the Angry Inch. And she travels around America writing these amazing rock songs. Spoiler alert, I'm going to tell you the plot to Hedwig and the Angry Inch here. Here we go. Writes these amazing songs, but they're stolen by her ex-lover, a guy called, what's his name? Tommy Gnosis, I think. Something like that. And he becomes like the biggest rock star in the world. He's kind of Marilyn Manson, is who he's supposed to be. And he has all the success. And Hedwig's like, yeah, but I wrote the songs. Oh, man, it's some movie, huh? Some movie. Tonight it's a Hedwig special. You wait till I play you Wig in a Box. Man alive. It's something about that. Great news. Great news. Internet. The internet has won today. The internet has won. Not only is John Gaunt getting trolled by the ASA online. It's funny. It's funny. He's doubling down and denying everything. And they tweeted him saying, John, the onus is on you to prove your diet works, not for us to prove it doesn't. And you haven't been able to prove it does. So thanks very much.
Ouch.
Not only that, but thanks to Will Guyot. Got a big up Will Guyot, tech expert, tech guru. Thanks to Will Guyot. Thanks to, I would say, 60% of the people who replied to my plea, and to the sheer patience of Scott Balcony. At Balcony Shirts is back online on Twitter. At Balcony Shirts is back online on Twitter. Here's a fun thing. Here's a fun thing for you. Why don't you just try and report some of those tweets and see what happens? Let's get this guy taken down permanently. Because here's the truth. It wasn't a joke. I did it deliberately. He's a scumbag. He threatened to kill me. Got taken back. It was so stressful. We think it was a permaban, but Will Guy, who is a tech expert, and if you've seen him on telly, he's been on here, he's been on a few other radio stations. Really nice guy. Looks like our friend Paul Scoynes.
Yes. That's why he's got on so.
He's broke because, you know, he's broke because he bought a farm, and there's like a huge barn there, and he just buys arcade cabinets to put in the thing, and he's got no money because he just, every time he gets some money, he'll buy an arcade cabinet. Aww. It's incredible.
No money, but he's happy.
He's happy. I'm going to go down there at some point. Anyway. I kind of messaged him and said, mate, this is what's happened. I'm in a pickle. Can you help? And he said, let me speak to some people at Twitter. And he came back and he said, Ian, here's the problem, right? You are classified, you are flagged up as someone to be taken seriously when you report a violation, when you report someone. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I said, I can't really go into too much detail, but there are some people who are kind of ignored a little bit. And there are some people who are taking it very seriously. It's not just because of the blue tick, but whenever you make a report, it's taken a bit more seriously than some others. And I'm really glad that Twitter are prioritising the safety of white heterosexual men online, because we're just not protected enough. And he said, Will said to me, it will get sorted. It may take a few days. I'm hoping it will take an hour. He said, I think I can get it done within an hour for you. So I then texted Scott Balcony. I got his Twitter account suspended because he threatened to kill me. So I then texted Scott, but it was crippling his business. It wasn't really, you know, but it wouldn't have been
annoying.
Great. It wouldn't have been great. So I texted him and said, give me 2 hours. Right. After an hour, nothing. After an hour and a half, nothing. An hour and 45, nothing. So I texted Will and said, Will, any news? He said, I've just asked for an update. After 1 hour and 59 minutes, Scott texted me and said, mate, there's only a minute to go. And I said, well, we've got plenty of time. Literally 60 seconds later, he went, I'm in. And they fixed it. They unsuspended the account. We had a good old laugh about it. My phone? I've left my phone. Anyway, he texted me saying his son had just phoned him up and was in hysterics about the whole thing. Thought it was hilarious. So we got sorted. So thank you to everyone who helped. A lot of you people retweeted, and you know, and I think that did help. That did give it a bit of weight. Some of you were a little bit narky. Well, up yours, Delors. Some of you were downright potty-mouthed. And I have to say that everyone who replied, and there were quite a few in the double figures, everyone that tweeted me saying, you're a C, or that's a C-ish thing to do, I hope you enjoy your Twitter suspensions, because I got them suspended.
Because they take his reports seriously.
Yeah, they do. Don't call me a C, because I'll report you. I got great pleasure. And it was a joke. People going, well, how can you why would you jokingly report someone? Did you not think what was going to happen? Do you know what? Obviously, I didn't. What I thought was going to happen was, it was dumb. It was really dumb. I made a really bad mistake. And here's the thing. I made a really bad mistake that hurt a good friend of mine. And I admitted the mistake. I put my hands up. I phoned him up several times and asked him what I could do to help. I offered to give him my Twitter. I have to give it to him. And I made a public apology and I made a public plea for help. And we got it sorted. We got it sorted. So there's all these people going, what did you think would happen? You're such a thief. Right, first of all, you're suspended now because you called
me
a C.
What did you think was going to happen when you called him a C?
Yes, exactly. And secondly, I can tell you what I thought would happen. I thought I'd get an email saying this doesn't violate the Twitter's terms, because I'd actually tried to report someone who'd been much worse the night before. And I would send him a screen grab of that and saying, oh, you got off this time. So up yours is what I'm saying. Up yours. Anyway, I'm off. I'm off Twitter now. Twitter is forbidden in the studio during the show, Catherine.
Yes, off. But by the way, well done, Twitter.
Yeah. Well done, Twitter. They did it. They sorted it. Yeah. Thank you. Well done, Will. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who offered your support and who tweeted the link to Scott's shop. It worked out.
Now, if Twitter could work on, you know, when people write to me to tell me that they're knocking one out of me, if you could possibly work on that, I'd be really grateful.
Okay, there we go.
But obviously I'm not on the same list as you are.
No. His priorities are screwy and skewy, and no doubt I'll get abuse from that. And then I tweeted...
Yeah, it's not your fault.
Then I deleted some of it. Then I deleted like my Twitter. I deleted Twitter the other day, and I opened it up again to try and sort this thing out with Scott. And then I said to Scott, by the way, once this is done, I'm out of here. And people thought it was because of the Scott thing. It wasn't at all. It was just out of there. Right? I'm not enjoying it there. So I deleted. And then this New Zealand tech expert tweeted... it's not fashion shops. It's not that easy to. It's not that. So I will come to you in a second, Andrew.
He's just trying to squeeze this accent out.
Fashion shops. It's not that easy to just get away, to make your mistakes disappear or something. And then he tweeted, my Twitter page had been deleted, but then a screen grab of the whole thing that started it off.
What was his name? Gemini Crackat.
I'm thinking, and I was sending all these to Scott, going, "What is this idiot?" And then some woman was having a go at me going, this is really bad of Ian Lee to do this because of the hardworking people at Twitter. And also it demeans the serious cries for help. Oh, no, it doesn't. So I just blocked anyone that's giving me abuse. Just blocked
them. Yeah, and you know what happens then? They come crying to me.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the guy who said there was a guy that claimed I'd slept with his dead mum. Sorry. Here's what I don't remember the incident. Here's what I think it was.
It was a your mum joke, wasn't it?
It was he would have said something, and I said, yeah, because I was, sorry, mate, I can't, I'm too busy doing it with your mum, or something like that. He would then have replied with the killer line, well, my mum's dead. Okay, right. So that's what that was, and I may have had a comeback. I don't know, don't remember. I think there was certainly a guy who was trolling me when I was doing Twitch, who I'd made a joke about it, doing it with his mum. It may have been that guy, I don't know. But he said it was on Twitter. And so He's
been holding on to that for this whole time.
He's been he's still been following me and laying into me. And I'm thinking, I've got no idea who you are. I don't know what you're talking about, dude.
I had a little chat with him.
I saw.
I got to the stage this afternoon where I kind of ran out of flying frogs to give.
Yeah.
And
just block them all. Block everyone on Twitter.
Well,
block them.
First, I just wanted to say it.
Losers, scumbags.
I quite enjoyed saying it.
A-holes and scumbags.
So don't come for me in the next 24 hours because I will come back.
Yeah, and also don't. I'm off Twitter for a bit. And listen, I'll probably go back on there at some point, probably. But don't send messages to Kath for me via Kath, because she will not pass them on. She's on strict instructions not to pass them on.
Because the point is, he's off Twitter.
Yes.
So.
I've deleted my email. I've deleted the contact me page on my website. I am in the process of changing my private email that some people have. I'm in the process of changing that, and I'm in the process of changing my phone number. So I'm disappearing off of the grid. You can phone me between 10 and 1, yeah. Monday to Fridays on Talk Radio, 0344-499-1000.
I was going to say, we're highly available for 3 hours. What are you waiting for?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know, I cannot be trusted on social media. That's fine. I've accepted that. And so I'm getting social media away from me. And also, I don't like being contactable. Okay, I don't like being contactable. You've got 15 hours a week when you know my telephone number, guys. So why don't you make the most of that? Let's speak to Andrew. Then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to have an intergalactic space war. Let's go to Andrew first of all, though. First of all, good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, Ian. Just a quick call about antidepressants and weight gain.
Yes.
I was listening to you last night, and you were sort of humming and ahhing whether you're going to go back on.
I'm going back. I'm going back. So I emailed my doctor today, and he said, yep, we're getting back on the venlafaxine. He's going to send me a prescription, hopefully by the end of the week. I'm back on them.
Okay. Well, I looked on your website, and you said one of the reasons you had stopped is because of the weight gain.
Fatty, made me fatty.
Well, I had a similar experience with mirtazapine.
Mirtazapine was the one that really made me put on a stone and a half.
Terrible,
I put on a stone and a half, and when I came off mirtazapine, I shifted a stone in a week. It was incredible. And then I put it back on again, and I think it's partly age, I think it's partly lifestyle, but I do think the mirtazapine has impacted on me in the long term in terms of what my glands.
Okay. Well, I was on that about 5 years ago, because I'm a similar age to you, and similar height, about 6'4".
Old and tall, yes.
And I was north of 17 stone on those.
Yeah.
But what I did, I had a lot of problems with my teeth, and in an effort to stop losing a tooth, I gave up sugar.
Oh.
And I saved my tooth.
Simple
and
as that.
I lost about 3.5 stone.
By giving up sugar?
By giving up sugar.
Now, here's the thing, because I did look into this a little bit. It's tough to do, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't really, because, I mean, all I do is I look on the supermarket on the per 100 grams.
Yeah.
If it's less than 3 per 100 grams, you can have it. So that means that you can have pizzas, you can have all the Chinese food, pasta, curries.
Yes.
There's always one or two which are less than 3%.
Oh.
And you can have, you know, but you've got to cut out, obviously, the obvious stuff, you know, chocolate and puddings. So if you go out, you can't have a pudding.
I love a pudding.
But I can, I've since changed from mirtazapine to citalopram.
Yeah.
But I haven't put on any weight. I'm about 12 and three quarters now.
Hey, what? 12 and three quarters stone at 6'4"?
Yeah, yeah.
This guy's
my
hero.
And it's just food. I get sort of normal eating, but no sugar.
You're my inspiration. I want to be Andrew.
He's your thin spoke.
There was a book I read after I'd given up the sugar, which is called Sweet Poison by David Gillespie.
Okay.
And that really explains what's going on.
Yeah.
And that was, that. You know, I recommend that to anyone. But if you're on, I think it's underestimated the effect, the weight gain that SSRIs and that class
of
people don't understand it.
Andrew, is it true that your taste buds get kind of retrained and you start to taste things differently?
I don't know. I enjoyed food before and I enjoy it now, so I don't know really. But I don't find it any hardship. You soon get used to it, and it means you can take the tablets, which make me feel so much better.
Yeah.
And you know, and don't have that horrible side effect of being, you know, when you're feeling down, the last thing you want to do is be 3 stone overweight.
Yeah, that was the thing I was getting to. Hey, go
on. You eat fruit? No.
Yes, I do. I eat whole fruit, but I don't eat fruit juice. That's and all dried fruit. I don't eat dried fruit, but I eat as much whole fruit as, you know.
But fruit is sugar, isn't it?
I know, but I think it's because it's the fibre in whole fruit. It sort
you
of
shit
changes
it out.
Its characteristic. But I wouldn't eat, so cereals are out.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, but you can have a English, you know, bacon and eggs or, you know, scrambled eggs.
This is knitter diet.
So we're talking about sort of refined sugar then that is out.
Well, no, all sugar really, but not, I do eat whole fruit, but that's the only real exception.
All right. Okay. Hey, listen, Andrew, nice one, man. And how's your head, very quickly? Are you kind of going
I'm
in the right direction?
The tablets helped me a lot.
Beautiful.
I'm going back, and
I kind of wrote a little blog post today saying it felt like a failure, but actually,
I know
it's not a failure, but it feels like
over
it.
Christmas, and I heard you saying you were thinking of stopping, and I thought, I hope he knows what he's doing.
Here we go. This guy's going for a plunge. Plunge pool.
Yeah.
All
right. It's a dangerous game, isn't it, stopping?
It is, Andrew. Thank you very much, indeed. I'm going back. It feels like failure, but I know logically it isn't. And I would say to anyone else, it's not a failure, but it feels like failure. because my head isn't lying to me at the moment. I got that. I'm there. I'm with it. Hey, Alan's there. Alan, stay there. I'm glad you phoned in because I want to have a chat with you in a bit, brother. 0344 499 1000. Hey, who wants a planet? We're giving planets away. Planets and stars are being given away. And then we are going to have an intergalactic space war. That's going to take place on the show. It's going to get bloody.
You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're all going to be clamouring for Uranus.
Oh, please, Catherine, we are better than that. This is the Late Night Alternative on Talk Radio.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We've had a text in. Catherine, you naughty girl, anus sex is taboo. Now, then you can click on
Tabooty.
You can click on someone's text and see their other texts. And they're all to, well, the previous one is, that's a terrible thing to say, quotes, I'm masturbation to you. But then all of the other texts are to George Galloway, saying, quite political statements.
Also, I don't remember talking about that particular element of lovemaking. I was talking about planets, you perv.
Let's go to the big man, Al.
Hey!
Someone sounding better than they did yesterday. I've been worried about you. How are you doing?
I'm feeling great, thanks, bud. I spoke to my doctor this morning.
Yeah?
And I had a nice long chat with him.
A lifelong chat?
A nice long chat.
Okay.
And he said, it's probably just a 24-hour thing. Have a cup of tea and get it out your system. So I was working on the allotment.
Hey, and are you feeling better?
Yeah.
Yes, mate. Alan's cured depression.
Especially with my birthday coming up on Saturday.
Here we go.
How old will you be?
39.
Aww. Here's the thing, right? Exercise doesn't work for me, right? But in terms of going for a run and stuff like that. But going for a walk does. Today I just went and sat on a hill and phoned some people. But doing physical stuff can be good because it kind of takes your mind off stuff. It becomes a bit like meditation. So doing the allotment is a great thing to do. I'm so pleased. I'm so proud of you, Alan. Well done, because you sounded terrible yesterday.
Again tomorrow.
There you go. We're going to the allotment.
Yep.
Here we go.
I don't want a planet.
Okay. So we're giving away planets, and I need to draw a map. So we start. The centre of the universe, of course, is the Earth. So that is the.
I thought the sun was the centre of the universe.
Mate, you don't know what you're talking about.
So, where's the number one paper?
Okay. Oh, he's good. He does know what he's talking about. So there's the Earth. Then you've got the sun is there. Then around the sun you've got the moon, which is smaller.
No, but the moon orbits the Earth.
I think you'll find it goes around the sun, mate. Otherwise,
it orbits the Earth. Mercury,
all right, so.
Venus, then the sun.
All right,
then Mars.
Of course it does, buddy. Okay, if the moon orbits the Earth, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How do we get a solar eclipse? Boom.
Because the moon is the direct path between the sun and the Earth.
Because it's going around the sun. You've just argued my point for me.
No, it goes around the Earth.
Yeah. Okay, mate. All right, mate. All right. Just don't forget that yesterday you didn't even know what day it was, and now suddenly you're Brian Cox. So we've got the Earth is the centre of the universe. We've got the sun. We've got the moon going around the sun. Then the next planet is Neptune.
No, Neptune's further away. It's Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto.
You've said Neptune twice, mate.
No, I said Uranus.
You said Neptune.
No, I'm not Poseidon.
Venus. So it goes like this. Earth.
No, Mercury.
Earth.
No, Mercury, Venus, Earth.
Earth, Neptune, Mars. Venus. Then we got Mars, which is a very, very small...
No. I am looking at Wikipedia. If you load up Wikipedia and look up the solar system...
No, I'm not going to.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn.
Saturn? You said Saturn. No, mate, you said Saturn. I'm sorry, Alan. You said Saturn. There's no such planet as Saturn.
Well, I wanted Alpha Centauri.
Sorry?
I wanted Alpha Centauri.
Okay, well, you can have Alpha Centauri.
That's right, at the very end.
Yeah, it's on the other side. Yeah, I've got to go over the page for that. So Alpha Centauri is tiny, it's insignificant, it is, would be very... By the way, this is going to be a war, right? So it'll be very, very easy...
I just thought of a space joke.
Oh, go on, mate.
Go on, Kath.
Next to Alpha Centauri, there's one called Eris. So,
yeah.
Do you know Eris from Uranus?
Okay. So Saturn.
So, question for Kath. You know Aries? Does he wham it in?
What?
Does he wham it in? Ram it in.
Aries the wham.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
When he's making love. So Saturn is next to Alpha Centauri. Now, Saturn has got the rings. And, of course, we know on the rings, that's where they keep the weapons. So if someone... So, Alan, you've got Alpha Centauri, mate, but you're going to get taken over quite easily because if anyone... The person who takes Saturn... I'm taking Saturn, so that's me.
What about you, Kath?
I'm going to go Venus.
Okay.
Venus was a name.
Okay, well, I can't actually give you Venus.
Why?
Because we can't give all of the planets to us. We've got to give it to the listeners.
Well, how come I don't get one?
Right, okay. Now
I've got one, Kath. Andromeda.
Shut up.
Oh, that sounds nice.
You're just making them up. Random number generator. Right, so Alpha Centauri is a... So generate... hang on a minute. Shush. Everyone shush. Random number generator between... One. Oh, it's there. Between 1 and 10. Right. So Alpha Centauri is only... is so small, it only gets 1. I get 9 numbers. He gets 1. So pick... I'll let you pick this, Alan. Pick a number between... You're going to lose this planet. Pick a number between 1 and 10, please.
4.
Right. I'm going to hit generate. If you get 4, then you win... You win the invasion from Saturn, from me, and you win Saturn. If you do not get 4, you lose Alpha Centauri, and I get it. Right, so I'm going to hit generate. If he gets a 4, Catherine.
Okay, I can vouch.
What did he get?
Oh, he got a 10.
Oh, mate, you got a 10, Alan. So you lose Alpha Centauri. You're out of the universe. I've got it. And I add that to my arsenal. Okay?
Okay.
Which is a planet not many people know about. Sorry about that, Alan. Tough luck, but you thought you knew more than me. And it turns out you actually knew significantly less. Thanks for your call. Goodbye.
Thank you.
There we go. So we've got the planets so far. We've got Earth, Neptune, in order. We've got the Sun and the Moon going around that. We've got Earth, we've got Neptune, we've got Venus, which I cannot let you have, Catherine.
You've missed out Mercury.
I've not got there yet. We've got Mars. Then on the next side of the page, we've got Saturn and Alpha Centauri, which are owned by me.
Uranus.
Then Uranus. Uranus is... Okay.
Neptune.
I've got done Neptune. Pluto. Neptune is next to Earth.
No, it's not. I mean...
Pluto isn't a planet. Pluto is gas.
Still there.
Yeah, so you're saying if I fart, that's a planet?
Is it? No, nothing could live on that.
Well then, Kath's done a joke. Let me deconstruct it and prove to you why it's not funny. So your definition of a planet is something that things can live on?
And they tend not to.
Loco, mate. Doesn't work at all. Nice try.
Loca.
So we've got Venus is next to Saturn.
No, it's not.
Then we've got... I've done Venus. We've got two Venuses, okay?
Because
we've got Venus.
You're cocking this right up.
No, I've not.
Do you want me to draw you a proper map?
I'll tell you what. This is what we do. I'd like you to draw your universe. This is my universe. There will be battles within the separate universes. And then the strongest universe will battle the weakest universe and I will win.
Yours doesn't exist. Yours is...
Mine is accurate.
Yours is mashup, man.
Mine is accurate. Admittedly, it's got two Venus, but that could happen. That's string theory.
I need a pen.
Okay, well, you should have got your own pen.
That is my pen.
No, it's not. No, this has been in my bag for very many weeks.
A zebra print pen.
Let me go to Craig. Good evening, Craig.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
I'm actually getting quite annoyed with with Catherine's lack of knowledge about the solar system.
Well, actually, I've got something that trumps that.
Oh, go on, what you got?
Because, you know, when you mentioned string theory...
Yeah.
According to quantum theory, we can be everywhere at once.
Does that mean I get paid when I don't come in?
Yeah.
Ah, now we understand the thing that our colleague Eamon is operating on.
He's got a quantum theory contract. Wow, that guy is good.
He is.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Oh, 0344 499 1000. It's Marnie Coppola, who has a new album coming out soon, which I've heard, and is incredible. And I'm not just saying that because I adore her. I think it's probably her best album ever. It's amazing. It's amazing. You've heard a couple of the songs.
Yeah.
It's incredible. That song is previously unreleased. You can only get that at the digital download of the song, that, of the album that my record label released, Unsung. So if you go to iTunes, Unsung, Imani Coppola, there's five previously unreleased tracks. Just feel we need to relax a little bit after Stephen Tobolowsky there.
Oh, gosh.
Wasn't he wonderful?
Loved so much.
Oh, it was funny.
And some of those stories we'd heard before because of the podcast, yeah. Which, by the way, you've got to subscribe to. What a great podcast that is. Just a storyteller.
What I think was great is there's like 80 episodes. I've heard five of them. So I've got over 75 hours worth of what I know is going to be brilliant. And he's got another 10 episodes coming out. Oh, thank you, sir. My thigh is burning, and I'll tell you why. Because I've got some Olbus oil on my handkerchief, and I've put it in my pocket. It's been there all day, and it's seeping through to my thigh, and my thigh is now feeling alive!
Decongested.
Alive! Energised! Energised!
I've heard of putting Vicks on your feet, but never Olbus oil on your thighs.
Olbus oil on your ding-dong. Imagine putting Vicks on your ding-dong or your Lady Putang.
Do not. That happened to my cousin.
Killed her, didn't it?
No, it didn't kill her. She was a baby.
Oh,
do you remember when
what?
When we were kids, do you remember that your mum used to put, we used to have this massive tub of Vaseline.
Yes. So
and
we
people had that had babies had massive tubs of Vaseline. You put Vaseline on the bums as a kind of, you know, stops them getting nappy rash and stuff. Well, my auntie, who wasn't the mother of the child, my oldest cousin, and not used to changing babies' bums, got a massive wadge of what she thought was Vaseline and whacked it on the baby's bum, and it was Vicks.
Oh, yay, yay.
Kid went through the roof.
Oh! Oh!
Yeah, she's a bit older than me. I think it stopped smarting about 2 years ago.
Hi, Chihuahua, guys. Hello, dear listener. This is the Late Night Alternative. I'm Ian Lee. Who are you?
Catherine Boyle.
It's a late night phone-in show like they used to be in the old days, in that it's hit and miss, but the hits are incredible. And do you know what? The misses are worth listening to as well, because they can be car crashes. And you don't get car crashes on radio anymore. You don't get people doing stuff that might not work. Everything is very neatly planned out and is very safe. And there's a posse. You've got a posse in and everyone's laughing at the host and all of that stuff. Very few shows where you've got a chance where actually it could be boring. It could be awful. It could go badly wrong. It could, you know, be gags that fall flat on their arse and actually reveal it, that could happen. So,
as it does in real life,
exactly. So, if you want to give us a call, 0344 499 1000. You've got Amy answering the phones tonight. She will answer the call, take your name and number. Cost you pennies, right? Probably free for most of you. Cost you pennies, but here's the rub. She then calls you straight back, and then you come on the air. We don't ask you what you want to talk about. We don't audition you. There's no interrogation process. Everyone is welcome to come on and talk about whatever they want. And 12 minutes past 12 on a Thursday night, Friday morning. I mean, that's kind of that's a very peculiar cosmic time, I think. So if there's anything that's on your mind, anything you want to get off your chest, now would be a great time to give us a call. I'm going to be honest. I can't stop thinking about Stephen. I've got a man crush on him. Mm-hmm. I knew it was going to be good. It was even better. What generous man as well. I sent him an email. You don't suppose you fancy coming on our show? Sure. When and what time? Thursday? Okay, I'll be on at 11 your time. Great, thanks.
Thing is, though,
generous.
At the end of every single one of his podcasts, he gives out his email address and encourages you to get in touch with him. And he means it.
Yeah. I have got rid of my email address, my public email address. For now, who knows what's going to happen at some point in the future. But for now, the public email address is gone. The contact me form on ianlee.com has gone. My private email address, I'm in the process of closing down. It's tricky because I can't remember who I've got, you know, but I'm closing that down. Got a new private email address, Catherine, and if you're lucky, I may give it to you. And
if you're lucky, I may respond.
I'm off Twitter in as much as my at Ian Lee is gone for now. Again, these things might change. Gone for now. And the 7A, the record label one that I do, I'm sharing that with Glenn, my business partner Glenn. So we're both kind of doing it. Twitter has been deleted off my phone. It's beautiful. Feels very blissful. And I've been doing a couple of Periscopes recently. So if you want to follow me on there, you can, because I don't have Twitter. It won't flash up in your Twitter feed that I'm doing it. Did a Periscope last night, Periscope today. Just trying to check in with the universe and try and get a little bit creative. Again, try and get a little bit creative. So that'd be mine to do. And make some cool things. And we have got some cool things happening. We've got lots of live shows. Manchester is almost sold out. Brighton has almost sold out. Luton has almost sold out. And the Shaftesbury Fringe. Those ones are up now. If you want to get tickets for those shows, ianlee.com/event. I've got to sort out Glasgow. The date is booked. I just need to set the ticket thing up. Belfast, we have a date. They're kind of not great at getting back. But we have a date. When did I say it was? I said it was July, Belfast?
June or July?
July is definitely Glasgow. Anyway, June or July. I just need... They're setting the tickets. So these things are happening. And I need to chase up Joe McGrath for the Magic Christian screening.
Yeah, because the next Rabbit Hole Picture Show is sold out.
Sold out ages
ago. Thanks mostly to Brossette.
Yeah, sold out. A lot of people coming who aren't our crowd. Boy, yeah. They're in for a shock.
They are.
They're in for a shock. So, yes, so that's kind of an update on the old news. Let us say hello to Rainbow George and hello to Ken.
Hooray! Hello. Hello there. Good morning, Ian and Catherine and Rainbow George.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, good night. What have you guys got for us tonight in your mystical plate of bullshit?
Well, that was really lovely with Stephen.
He was good, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was excellent and thought-provoking. I wanted you to ask him when he was receiving information about people, did he ever communicate with whoever was sending him that information?
Well, we didn't ask him that, and that's one of those things we'll have to ponder. I kind of got the feeling that he said that it was when he was initially exploiting that, and I use the word exploiting in its true meaning, when he was initially exploiting that skill, it was one of the worst periods of his life.
Yes, but he was receiving information, so... Yes. I just wonder if he ever tried to communicate with whoever was sending him that information. Well, do any of his podcasts go
digital? I don't know. I've listened to four. There are 80 so far.
Here's an idea. Why don't you email him?
No, don't.
He encourages it.
Don't.
Email him.
Don't. I don't think so.
Why not?
Okay, well, you do what you got to do. I just don't think that's a great thing to put these two in touch. Anyway, Ken, what would you like to say?
Yes, I was very interested in your earlier discussion about the horrible wacko deaths and when they followed the David Koresh cult.
Yes.
This is an extreme. I remember that. I think we lived in Canada at the time. What year was that?
Was it 93? 93, I think, that where it all kicked off, so to speak.
93.
Horrendous, yeah. A lot of people died.
Horrendous. However, the thing about that was, although it was a horrible cult, there was relatively only a few people were fooled by this Koresh and his teachings.
Well, in terms of the then, I guess, 5.5-6 billion people in the world, yes. But I think about 120 people burnt to death, so significant number of loss of life. Oh,
and also, there are still people in Waco who believe he's coming back and who are still revering
Koresh. Can you believe that, Ken? That there are nutjobs who think a dead guy's coming back?
Say that again.
Can you believe that there are nutjobs who think a dead guy's coming back?
Oh, I there are many, many nutjobs, as you say, around the world. However, there is a coming false messiah who will deceive almost the whole world. This is not...
Is that Jeremy Clarkson?
No.
Boris Johnson?
Is going to be the Antichrist. He is going to arise out of the new... a European state of 10 kingdoms. The present 27 state Europe will collapse in the future and be revived into 10 kingdoms.
Right.
And this Antichrist will come out of the 10 kingdoms and he will deceive the whole world and especially the nation of Israel.
George, what do you reckon?
I reckon Ken really doesn't know what he's talking about.
And... School him.
Sorry?
School him.
Well, I'm saying the whole Jesus story is a mythical story that has deeper meaning to it, and the Jesus you believe in, Ken, he was supposed to come back when the generation he was speaking to was still alive.
No, that's not so, George. Jesus said that the generation that is alive, when the prophecies he speaks about takes place, they will see all things happen. And when the people see the return of the revelation of the Messiah, that generation will see the return of Jesus. So we have to rightly divide the scriptures, George. However, this man is going to be worshipped throughout the world. He's called the man of sin. He is the Antichrist. And he is going to enter the world into a new world economic order where the world is going to be forced to take a mark.
Imagine. I can't begin to imagine what it feels like to be so full of fear and trepidation of the future, and so worried about some ghost stories. I mean, I just can't imagine. Well, I know, because you got Jesus. Jesus will protect you and all of that. But I just can't. I can't begin to. Let me finish. I just can't. I've let you spout your nonsense. I just can't begin to imagine what it feels like to be so worried about this stuff that may or may not happen. To have your life governed by it. Just get on with your life. Why not just get on with your life?
Ian, I am full of joy. I'm not full of...
No, you're not. You're full of bitterness and spite and hatred and selfishness. You're very narcissistic.
I'm full of joy, not depression.
No, you're not. You're full of... There you go. You had to do a little... You had to do a little dig, didn't you?
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0344 499 1000 is the phone number. Let's go to Ryan. Good evening, Ryan. Sheena, you'll be next. Do stay there, please. Hello, Ryan.
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm all right. What have you got for us?
I was phoning up for another car crash. I phoned you this time last week for a generic conversation, sort of a unprepared one, and you sort of fired into me a bit about how it's not I should phone this sort of radio station. So I've been listening over the last week a bit more, because I sort of explained to you at the time I was sort of having a bit of trouble and I was staying up a bit late more recently. So I thought, I'll listen to you, give it a chance. And loads of people seem to phone up for generic conversations. So I still can't work out what I did wrong.
Well, no, because you didn't phone up for a generic conversation. You just phoned up and said, I've got nothing to say. Go on, what do you want to talk about? That's not a generic conversation. That's no conversation. That's making me do all the work. And I do quite enough work as it is.
Well, yeah, all right.
So that was the point.
It's more.
And you've had a whole week to think about it and you didn't get the point.
No, but that's the thing. So I'm phoning back. So it was more of a bounce off thing anyway. I was just sort of giving it a chance, trying to work it out.
Stop deconstructing. Why are you? I've just told you the answer. So stop deconstructing it. Stop, going all meta on my ass. And what do you want to talk about tonight?
I'm asking you for suggestions. Sort of like what do you suggest?
Exactly the same. This is exactly the same thing you did last week. You phoned up and said, I want to have a chat, but I've got nothing to talk about. What should I talk about? I'm doing enough work here, Ryan. Don't give me more work to do. I'm doing plenty of work.
I've been trying to see. I've been having a look on the webpage, Talk Radio 1, and on Twitter, but not on that. So it's like, well, I'm trying to sort of gauge how to approach it. I'm sort of asking it. It's just, I'm going to keep doing this until I get it right.
Well, if you keep phoning up saying, I've been deconstructing last week and I still can't work out, when I phone up and say, I'd like to chat, but I've got nothing to talk about, why you get angry with me? I don't understand it. If you're going to keep doing that every week, well, we'll just stop answering your call.
I don't want to do that, do I?
Don't keep phoning up doing that then, because I don't want you to do that.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm not really getting anywhere, Ken. I was hoping that it might move forward slightly. But...
Okay, what do you want to talk about then?
I don't know. That last call.
There is the stumbling.
Work out what the show's about. It's
the show isn't about anything. But people phoning up saying, I want to talk, but I haven't got anything to talk about. Well, where do I go with that?
I'll have to pick a subject.
Well, that's twice. That's twice you've done it.
Okay. I thought I'd try and just get myself a bit prepared last time. But I'll say the way you approached the last call and things like that is just absolutely crap me up. So I've got no way of gauging it.
Right, you've got meta. Hang on, Ryan.
I'll phone you next week.
Well, no, that's not the show at all. Listen, here's the thing, though, right? Right, there's a yellow card. Don't swear again, otherwise you will get banned.
Sorry, you're not...
Of course you're not allowed to say the F word on radio, you absolute idiot. Right.
I thought it was at night. I thought you were allowed at night.
No, of course you're not allowed at night. Right. Here's the thing. You got Meta and you deconstructed your side of the call. Shall I get Meta and deconstruct my side of the call?
Well, OK. You lot did call Pink Panther a prick once. That's what I found up ages ago.
You call him an effing prick, though, did he?
Yeah. So,
No. Yeah, you're right.
See, here's one of the things you need to do. You need to learn to listen. This is what I'd like you to practice over the week. Listen, because I just asked you a question, which you ignored. Go on, ask it again. Ah, it means you didn't hear it.
OK. I'm sorry. I do need to learn to listen. You are correct.
There you go. Well, that's something. Did you hear the question that I asked?
I didn't, no.
Right. I said, you have deconstructed your side of the call.
Oh, well, you'll have to deconstruct yours, yes, sorry.
Not what I said. Would you please shut up and learn to listen? This is a lesson in listening. I said, you had deconstructed your side of the call. Would you like me to deconstruct mine?
Okay, sorry. I did, sorry. Go on then, of course.
Right. Maybe this side of the call is part of the show.
Okay. As in, like, you bounce off what offered to you.
Now we're getting somewhere. That was actually a bigger leap than I was expecting you to make.
Okay. I do apologise then, because I was trying to do that off you last week, but I thought you might have a loose subject matter for me to at least fire into, because I didn't get a chance to listen. I just phoned. And I wasn't trying to be rude by doing that. It's just that I knew that you were on, and then I just thought, I've got kids in bed. I couldn't really have it on, so I just phoned up. So,
but do you not see what I'm saying? That maybe this phone call is the show. Maybe this phone call is perfect for the show.
It's probably not very good listening, though, is it?
Who cares? Don't worry about those guys. Those guys are losers. Everyone that listens to this is a loser, right? Forget them. All that's important right now is me, you and Kat, right? And maybe, just maybe...
You just called me a loser.
Well, yeah, you are. We all are. We're all late-night losers. Welcome to the club.
Oh, cool.
But maybe this phone call where we're arguing about you not understanding how the phone calls to this show work, maybe this phone call is the perfect phone call for the show.
Ah, look, it's in an advert for how not to approach it or to approach it.
Nope.
Or not.
As the case may be.
Mm. Okay, well, there you go, perfect. As in,
well, it's not perfect.
No one's listening, so it doesn't
matter. You keep worrying about the listeners. Why? Don't worry about them. There's no one listening.
You worried about listeners. That's not obviously not, so
I'm not. There's no one listening. There's either no one listening or there's an infinite number of people listening at the same time. It doesn't matter.
It's my Britishness doing the embarrassment thing for you, then. Sorry.
This call may be perfect for the show. It may be the show. Or it may be awful for the show. Wow. Now we're going into Schrodinger's cat.
Open the box. See what's in it.
No, once you open the box, it's over.
Depends how long it's been there, doesn't it?
It's while the box is shut. That's the it's while the box is shut and has the gas been fired off or not? Poison gas. Everyone forgets the poison gas part of Schrodinger's cat. Everyone forgets the gas.
I never knew the time limit bit either, because I thought if it's like 8 months later, it's pretty obvious. Excuse me, sorry.
So how would you feel if I said this was tonight, apart from our guests, that this call, Ryan, is the best call of the night? In terms of what the show is. Yeah. Mind blown, huh? Mind blown.
I might have a good day tomorrow from that.
Mind.
I tend to seem to need that.
Mind blown.
I phone up the radio a lot.
Who else do you phone up? What other shows? What other stations?
No other stations. No, I couldn't get into LBC. If I get anywhere near James O'Brien, it'd be game over.
Okay.
Mike Graham. I phone him a lot. Juliana Brewer, if I could be bothered that morning, early in the morning, she gets wound up with something. Yeah. And Eamon, speak to him a bit.
Oh, does Eamon work here?
Sometimes.
You're lucky to find the shows he's in. Well, there you go. Listen, they're all great shows, but they are all great shows. I'm fans of all of them. But here's the conundrum. You're used to phoning very traditional phone-in shows where they've asked you a specific question. We don't ask, we very rarely do me or Kath ask you a specific question. It's more ambient than that.
Well, that's what I'd like to tap into, because I do have to stop and gear myself into whatever I'm chatting and sort of tone it down a bit as I'm going. Well, I did get told off by Mike Graham the other day.
Oh,
so.
Good, good. But here's the thing. We've been talking for about 8 minutes about nothing. This is a very zen phone call.
Is it just the music making you say that?
No, no. It's the perfection of the phone call.
Sort of the full circle thing.
Yeah, maybe. So well done. It's
nice.
We got nowhere.
Well, but we are revolving.
I'd quit while I was ahead if I were you. You've just taken lesson two. Congratulations.
Nice.
Look forward to speaking to you again, Ryan. Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Poor Ryan.
That was the perfect call that encapsulates this show. He's learning. He's got a long way to go.
You know what it is?
Yeah.
He's used to ringing up shows and being prepared to have an argument about something he pretends he cares about more than he does.
Yeah.
Don't have to do that on this show. Just come on and be Ryan.
Yeah. And that was it. Beginning was a little bit rusty, but there were moments. And when I say the perfect call, that's a slight. It wasn't quite, but there were moments, pure moments, where that phone call was floating an inch above the ground, just for like a second, and then it hit the ground again. Because we started thinking about it. That's the thing about Zen, right? Everyone has moments of Zen, but then you go, oh, I'm having a moment of Zen. Yeah. Ah, balls, it just ended.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
This is the movie version of the song Radiohead from the movie True Stories, okay, which is one of my favourite films. I saw it about 20 years ago and was like, wow, this is like Head for the 80s. Hallelujah, it's finally been released on a Criterion Collection DVD. It came out earlier this year, like last month, and I got it, and it's packed full of extras. The original movie soundtrack is released for the first time. Talking Heads released a True Stories album where it's them doing the songs from the movie, and it's great. But this is the original. This is John Goodman and the whole cast doing the songs.
And what I liked about that film was I had never seen it before, but you used it as a test of our friendship.
Yes.
Now, is she going to like this? Because if she doesn't, 5 years out the window.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
What a film.
And I know a few of you have seen it as a direct result. Anyway, the DVD is packed full of extras, as it should be. No director's commentary, disappointing, but the rest of it is packed full of extras. And I fell down a couple of rabbit holes in the extras. The first one was a gentleman called Spalding Gray, who plays the mayor in the movie. And I remember seeing it years ago and thinking, this guy is an incredible performer. He's doing these weird things with his hands. And I've kind of fallen down a Spalding Gray rabbit hole. Amazing performance artist and actor. Did a series of one-man shows. Did a movie with Nick Brumfield, who we love. Really tragic life. Committed suicide, I think it's about 10, 15 years ago. So I've kind of been stocking up on books on DVDs. And then I saw this Tom Olasky character kind of popped up as one of the people involved who supposedly you see the movie, and it's Stephen Tobolowsky, written by, and he's on there as part of the extras going, didn't write the movie. and I kind of was Googling him, and he's been in over 200 movies, and I recognised him, of course, from Groundhog Day. And the weekend I discovered his wonderful podcast, and I was listening to four of those. You listened to about three or four of them as well.
I did. I was tidying my wardrobe. I folded everything. It's a good job my kids didn't come in. They would have been folded up and put away too.
It's such a good podcast. It's so good. And I just, on an off chance, sent Stephen an email, and Stephen foolishly replied and agreed to come on the show this evening. And we have Stephen on the line now. Good evening, Stephen.
Good evening, Ian.
It's so nice to talk to you, man, honestly. And your voice is so familiar because I've seen you in... I've not seen all 200 movies, let's be honest, but I've seen you in so many movies. I've seen you in the Goldbergs, the series that's kind of just showing over here. And I've got to say, man, your podcast, the Tobolowsky letter...
Files.
I keep calling it letters. Files. What a joy, man. How was that fun to do?
Well, it's still being fun. It was kind of an accident the way the whole thing happened. Yeah, this is another story, I guess. In 2008,
yeah.
I was riding a horse on the side of an active volcano in Iceland.
And we're off!
And we're off. This is absolutely true. This is no exaggeration. Is that I got hit by a gigantic wind off the Atlantic Ocean that lifted me and my horse off the ground, carried us several feet, dropped me on the other side of the road, and my horse kind of thought it was like God saying, giddy up. And that horse took off, and I got thrown onto a hardened lava flow somewhere on the other side of the mountain.
Ouch.
And I was going in and out of consciousness, and I ended up breaking my neck in five places, and the middle vertebra was C4, what the pros call it,
yes.
C4, got crushed. So when I got back to the United States, my doctor told me I had a fatal injury, which was pretty... shocking. It was at first I thought it was kind of a terrible misuse of the word fatal, because obviously it wasn't, and I was scared. And then I thought, wait a minute, this is kind of inspirational.
Oh, come on.
What if what the doctor said was true and I really died on the mountain in Iceland? What are some of the stories I have never told my boys about their dad? And so I started writing these stories about first love and first adversaries and Radiohead, et cetera, like stories which became the Tobolowsky Files, yeah, as kind of a way so my kids would know who their dad was. And coincidentally, it'll come as no surprise to any parent listening to this, my children have not listened to any of it. None of it. But it became a podcast that I guess has gone all over the world now, and of these nutty, crazy, but true stories. That's the Tobolowsky Files.
They are beautifully told, they're beautifully written. I do want to talk about true stories, because I've devoured, yeah, all of the extras on there, and I found episode 44 of your podcast, which is the one where you talk about working with David Byrne, and you and your wife wrote the movie, gave him the movie, and then didn't hear anything for a year. Is that right?
Well, Beth wasn't my wife. She was my girlfriend of 16 years.
Okay.
And she had just won the Pulitzer Prize for dramatic literature,
wow,
in America for her play Crimes of the Heart. And so Jonathan Demme, who did Stop Making Sense, yeah, with David, really wanted to get Beth to write David's movie, True Stories. So Beth met with David, and she called me up and said, I have no idea what David is talking about. Maybe you should come over and you talk to David. So I went over and talked to David, and I didn't understand quite what David was talking about. But on the wall of his home, which had no furniture in it, on the wall of his home, there were about 200 pencil drawings. And he said, could you turn these drawings into a movie? And I looked at them for about 2 hours, and I said, David, I'll tell you what, I'll go home, I'll write something, an outline or some sort of, and if you like it, you can hire me to do the movie. If you don't like it, you could keep whatever I write and use it anyway, whatever. So anyway, that night I wrote 35 pages of outline and scenes and character descriptions from True Stories, wow, that became True Stories. David hired me. And then he called up Beth and said, well, if I have Stephen working on the structure and the characters, Beth, can you be working on the movie too? So Beth and I wrote the first draft of True Stories in 19 days, which is not a lot of time.
No, that sounds quite speedy for a movie treatment or script, yeah.
Right, and we gave it to David, and then, as you have mentioned, we did not hear from David for a year, a year. And then I'm driving through the Hollywood Hills, and I hear a knock, knock, knock on my car window, and it's David Byrne on a bicycle beside my car. And he's gesturing for me to roll down the window. So I roll down the window. He goes, Stephen, sorry, haven't been back in touch with you. You know, we've been on the road with the Talking Heads, and I got your script, and I changed a lot of it. I changed most everything. But are you going to be home this afternoon? Because there's something I really want you to hear. And I said, sure. So I went home, and David went and got his guitar and came over. Wow. And he said, I really liked the story you told me about how when you were young, you had this experience where you heard tones in your head. So I wanted one of the characters in the movie to have that. And he sat there and said, and I wrote this song for them. So he played me in my living room the song Radiohead. And I went, damn. Not only was it a fantastic song, but this event, this kind of psychic event, happened to me when I was 19 years old.
And this really happened, didn't it, Stephen? You recount this in the podcast. You just found yourself saying stuff and answering questions that were absolutely spot on, and with stuff that you couldn't have known.
It was horrible. It was really? It was one of the worst periods of my. It began. We were on a movement retreat, so I'm 19 years old, and my movement teacher takes us out on a retreat, which sounded really stupid. It sounded like we were going to be doing the same thing we did in class, but closer to bugs and farther away from good toilets.
Sounds awful.
And so at the end, we're sitting around the fire, and he says, I want everyone to say the first thing that comes into your mind. And my teacher is at 12 o'clock, if you imagine that clock, yeah. And I'm at 6 o'clock. And people around the circle, the book Lord of the Rings was out at the time, so they were going like, Frodo. And then the next person said, like, Gandalf.
Oh, God.
And the next person said, Frodo. And then the next person said, well, he just took my word. And my teacher said, don't filter, just say what you want to say. Okay, Frodo. And so it's coming around to me, and I'm hating this exercise. Mm. I have no idea what I'm going to say. And then I hear this sound in my head, like this tone in my head. And the teacher said, Stephen, what would you like to say? And I looked at my teacher, and I said, I think your name is not your name. I think you're operating under an assumed identity, and your real initials are either JK or JL. Pause. Then the teacher goes to the next one. All right, you're up next, Don. He goes, Gandalf. And it goes back around the circle. So we're all breaking, and I'm going to my car, and out of the shadows, my teacher comes and says, Stephen, why did you say what you said about me? And I said, I'm sorry. You just said, don't filter, say what you want. He said, because it's true.
Oh, my God.
I have an assumed name. I came here, I changed my name, and my initials are JK, like you said. So I ask you, how did you know that? And I said, I have no idea. He said, has anyone ever done psychic experiments with you? And I go, no. I mean, this is Texas in what, like, I'm 19, so it's like the 70s. There's no psychic experiments. So I go over to his house one day, and it was one of the – he asked me to come over to do these psychic experiments. I asked if I could bring Beth, who was a freshman at the time, and I was dead in love with her.
Yeah.
And this was kind of our first date. I took her over to our teacher's house. We're holding hands over this Japanese prayer stool. And he says, okay, Stephen, now just tell me what you see. Well, I didn't see anything. I heard things.
Yeah.
So I hear this sound. And I say, I think there's a 5-year-old over by your fireplace, and there's a 40-year-old woman on the telephone. And my teacher lets go of my hands, like starts walking around the room in a panic. And I said, what's wrong? What's wrong? And he says, I was babysitting my 5-year-old nephew. He was over by the fireplace. I told him it wasn't safe. He ran out the front door and was hit by a car.
Oh, no.
My sister, on her 40th birthday, called on the telephone you pointed to and committed suicide.
Oh, God.
At this point, I'm starting to cry. And Beth and I drive her back to the dorm, and she says, what do you know about me? And I said, nothing. And she says, well, maybe we should hold hands and you should concentrate.
Fantastic.
And I'm thinking like, hey, you know, there could be something.
This is working.
Stuff. Now it's going. So I hold Beth's hands and I said, Beth, I don't see anything. And she looked at me, says, no. You don't see things. You hear things. Do I make a sound? And I said, yes, Beth, you do. And I said, and she said, what do I make? And for some reason, this came out of my mouth. This was pretty much word for word. I said, you have 3 tones in the male range. Male tones are higher than female tones. Your 3 tones are in harmony.
Wow.
She said, what does that mean? I said, well, it either means you are sufficient unto yourself or you always get your way. And Beth looked at me and said, we're going to make a fortune. You know, it seems like, Ian, you just bring the terrible stories
out. I'm so sorry. We're going to go to the light in a minute. I promise, Stephen. We will go to the light.
It was my birthday was coming up, and my wife, Ann, said, I'm going to. Now, Annie and I, we've been married 30 years. She says, I have a little birthday thing planned for you. And I said, okay. And I hear this thing in my head. I said, I tell you, you know, you're always joking about my ESP and all this stuff. I said, I'll tell you what, it's all just foolishness. I'm going to write on a piece of paper what the birthday is, and then we'll go and have our birthday party, and you'll come back and see what I heard in my head, and you'll know that it's all just a crock. So I got a piece of paper, and I wrote, we're going to drive down to downtown Los Angeles to the concert hall, and Ann got me permission to play on the grand piano of the stage of Disney Hall. And so anyway, I write that and seal it in an envelope, and Ann says, well, we're going to lunch at a really nice place, so maybe you should dress up in a suit or something like that.
God.
I'm saying, oh, okay. And she says, the restaurant is kind of downtown, so why don't we just kind of head toward you know where we go to concerts, you know, Disney Hall? You know, if you park in the basement of the concert, the restaurant's right across the street. And I am about to puke. Do you have that word in England?
Yeah, we have the word puke, yes.
I'm just like going absolutely pale. We go up the elevator, and there's the custodian of the concert hall, and he goes, right this way, sir. And they open the doors.
Oh,
there's the grand piano on the center of the stage at Disney Hall. A friend of mine has come from home with all of my music, comes up on stage, and I get to play on the stage of Disney Hall for about an hour and a half. And
incredible.
I'm thinking the whole time, I'm going to get murdered when we get home. It's going to be so bad. Anne came home and she was laughing, and then she opened up the envelope and went absolutely pale. And she was certain that either I had overheard her phone conversations or had been spying on her computer or something. And I said, no, baby, no, it just for some reason, that's what I heard and that's what we had. But those kind of things happen a lot.
It's incredible. And here's the thing, you know, I me and Kath, we don't normally tend to believe this stuff. But when we heard it in your podcast and telling it now, how can you doubt this? How can you doubt this experience? Let's move away from the dark a little bit. When was the last time you saw David Byrne? Have you seen him at all recently? Did you see him when the Criterion were putting the DVD together?
No, I didn't. I saw David about 3 years ago. I want to say maybe 2-3 years ago with Jeff Bezos. We were at a kind of conclave in Santa Fe, out kind of around Santa Fe, New Mexico, and everybody was Jeff Bezos brought together about
50 different people to present different entertainments for one another that were kind of mind-blowing. And David was one of the presenters, and I was doing one of my stories for everybody. So I saw David again after that time, and it was odd. It was odd seeing David after so many years, but it was fun. It was fun seeing him, and we ended up having a wonderful talk.
This actually may be the last art question. Then we're going to take a break, if you don't mind, and then we will come back to the light. But in the True Stories episode of your podcast, you talk. Listen, I'm a former cocaine addict, right? I'm a junkie. I'm in recovery and all of this, and I've never heard anyone describe the what cocaine does in such a beautiful and devastating description. You describe it something like it's energy that you've borrowed from your future that you have to pay back with interest, and it's a very selfish act. And I just wondered what your relationship with cocaine was. Was it an irregular thing? What did you ever get a problem with cocaine, or was it just like every now and then? If you don't mind me asking.
No, I don't mind you asking, but Ian, it just bit me on the ass. Mm. It was, and it wasn't as bad as some of our friends. You have to remember, this was kind of the 1980s, and back then, it wasn't that cocaine was addictive. It was that it was expensive.
Right.
That was the rap on cocaine. Nobody ever thought, oh, you're going to get addicted to this stuff. It was like something that made you, you know, flirt with other men's wives.
Yeah.
That's all it was. And so I would use it for a party. I was in a rock band at the time, and we would do it afterwards to party. And it got to be where I felt I really needed it more than I wanted to need it.
Right.
And like I said, other friends of mine went, like you were talking before, down the rabbit hole. Other friends of mine, it really destroyed their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with a method of getting myself off of cocaine, in which I had someone actually from London read my method, and they used it, and it helped them undo it. And if briefly what my method was, I said I wasn't addicted to cocaine. I was addicted to the cash machine that I needed to get the cash to buy the cocaine.
Right.
So maybe if what I did is I spent the exact same amount of money I was spending on cocaine every week, but I had to spend it on me. I couldn't save the world. I couldn't do anything. I had to spend it on me. And the first week it was easy.
Yeah.
You know, the first week I like bought a set of encyclopedias. I bought some Cuban cigars. I bought like Paradis brandy. Second week it was not so easy. So I'm buying like some Italian suits. It was and I have to keep spending this money every week on me of new stuff. And it became exhausting spending money on myself.
Yeah.
And after 8 weeks, I said, I can't do it anymore. I'm stopping this. And I realized that for the last 8 weeks, I had not done any cocaine. And I had lost the physical need for cocaine.
Brilliant.
And I had transformed myself into a narcissistic actor with a closet full of Italian suits, the richest brandies in the world, Waterford Crystal. It didn't improve my personality, but I wasn't addicted to cocaine
good
anymore.
Steve, before we go on to the next proper question, I need to ask, Tobolowsky, Tobolowsky, which is the correct one? Because I've said both, and I was going to stick with one, and I didn't, and I'm sorry.
I think they're both good. I went and asked my Uncle Nathan, who was the historian of our family, the same question. I said, because they all pronounce it differently. I said, is it Tobolowsky, Tobolowsky, Tobolowsky? And he said, you can pronounce it any way you not want because it's not really your name.
Oh, blimey.
And I went, what? He says, yeah, when grandfather came to America, he came through Galveston, Texas, not Ellis Island, and he didn't speak the English very well, and the guard who was bringing him into the country didn't speak the Yiddishkeit or whatever grandfather was speaking. And so he asked, who are you? And grandfather only know the who, wo, from German, meaning where, not who, but where are you? Thinking he was saying, where are you from? And so in his grandfather's way, he said, I'm Abraham from Tobolsk. And so the guy didn't understand him.
Right.
And so he said, okay, from now on, you're Abraham Tobolsky. So according to that legend,
incredible.
I got my name the same way Don Corleone got his name in The Godfather.
Incredible. Catherine, you wanted to ask Stephen something. There's so much we want to ask, but go on.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for telling us about your mother. No, the podcast, the bits about your mum were great. The David Byrne going to your family home and being offered an array of drinks several times had me in tux. It was so funny.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, my mother is... magnificent. If you're listening to the podcast, one of the first podcasts I wanted to do about my mother was, I think, the fourth one, number four, called The Alchemist. And here in America, National Public Radio named that podcast as one of the top recorded podcasts done. So that's a good one to introduce you to my mother.
Brilliant.
Because it's pretty hilarious and pretty... heartbreaking. It's pretty great.
Yeah, actually, just wonderful. Thank you. You paint such beautiful pictures. I also wanted to ask you, I know you've worked with many greats, and I know Ian wants to ask you about Steven Seagal at some point.
Yes, I do. But
but I wanted to ask you about Gerard Depardieu, because I was a languages student in the mid-90s, and Gerard Depardieu seemed to do the impossible, which was kind of crossover. As a man who wasn't a matinee idol and didn't have great English, he crossed over and he became quite famous in America. And I know you worked on a film with him.
Yes, My Father the Hero, we did that in the Bahamas, and I did that with my wife, Anne. She played my wife in the movie.
Oh,
and I think it was one of Katherine Heigl's first roles. I think Kathy Heigl was maybe... early teens, 11, 12, 13, around in there. She plays the female lead in that. And Gerard, I was a huge fan of his. Mm. And we were shooting at the Ocean Club, I know, in the Bahamas. And I had specifically learned this piece of Mozart that was used as the soundtrack of one of his films. And so in between takes, I went over to the grand piano that was there at the party, and I started playing this Mozart piece. And Gerard came over and said, "That sounds so familiar." And I said, "Gerard, it's a song from your last movie that came out." He goes, oh, that's wonderful. We got to be about 3 in the morning, and I started playing the Moonlight Sonata. Whenever you see anything in a movie that takes place at night, you got to figure the actors were up all night.
Yeah.
So it's about 3 in the morning. We're on the beach in the Bahamas, moon and stars, and I start playing the Moonlight Sonata just in the background in between shots. And one of the Bahamian men who was an extra in the movie, working as a waiter, came up to me and said, "That is the most beautiful song I've ever heard. Is there a recording of it?"
Well.
And I said, "Oh, yeah, there are lots of recordings of it." He says, "Well, I'm getting married next month, and I would like this song to be played in my wedding."
Wow.
"Because it's the only song I've ever heard that's as beautiful as my wife."
Oh, well played.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner.
Gerard on this movie, Gerard Depardieu, I always thought he was the greatest actor in the world. We had so much fun shooting the movie, and it was such a treat for me to be so close to, really, at that time in my life, I thought he was the greatest actor in film. So to work with him was such a treasure, and it was one of the great moments for me.
Stephen, why acting? How did you get into acting? Because you say you grew up in Texas. I can't even imagine that, you know, we think of Texas, we think of, you know, big men with big hats and oil and, or, you know, kind of manly
pursuits. Not saying acting isn't manly, but the arts and creativity and performing doesn't kind of strike me as a normal Texan endeavour. So how did you get into acting?
Oh, this, Ian, this is really a stupid answer. This is going to challenge everyone. I got into acting because when I was 5 years old, I thought monsters were real. And I loved monsters. I loved Godzilla, and I loved Dracula and the Wolfman. And I thought if I became an actor, I could hang out with these monsters.
Oh, fantastic.
And that propelled me through my early years doing plays around, you know, I'm getting ready to work with Godzilla, hopefully someday. And then I got to college, and well, in I don't want to jump anything because it's all pretty grim. And I got sick when I was 13 years old, and I couldn't play anymore. I couldn't do sports. I couldn't go outside. So I spent a lot of time indoors and for about 2 years, and I began reading plays.
Yeah.
And I began thinking, well, I could act. That's indoors. And I became one of the big actors at our high school. And then I went to college, and I thought acting was noble. It was the first time that I encountered Shakespeare and Chekhov and Shaw and all those great, great writers. And then I came out to Los Angeles. And I'm auditioning for Butt Crack Plumber. I'm auditioning for, you know, Homeless Man Number Two. And I realized it has nothing to do with nobility.
No.
But at that point, it was the only thing I knew how to do.
Yeah. And, I mean, can you believe it? We were looking at your IMDb, and, you know, there are some years when you've got like 10 movies coming out. You've been constantly working. You've been in over 200 movies. You know, some small movies, some huge movies. The Philadelphia Experiment, by the way, one of my favourite films. You're still working with things like the Goldbergs and stuff like that. Can you believe it? Can you believe that this incredible career and life that you've had and you are still having and you are still successful in?
Yeah, it's shocking. Right now, we just finished the third year of One Day at a Time on Netflix, and I don't know if it plays in England. If it does, you got to watch it. It's the most spectacular show. But it's like, here it is. I'm almost 68, I think.
Wow.
And I have been working on the best projects all together in one chunk I've ever worked on in my life. One Day at a Time is absolutely brilliant show.
It is. I've just checked it. It's on the UK Netflix, One Day at a Time. So I'm having some of that this
weekend. Well, you got to watch it. You got to watch it. It's absolutely hilarious and heartbreaking, if you could believe both of those things in the same sentence. And it's like an old traditional sitcom. Our executive producer, Norman Lear, like the original One Day at a Time. Mm. But this really pushes it to the limit. What I tell everybody, we just premiered the third season. What I tell everybody, watch the first show of the first season, and if you don't flip, if you don't go like, wow, I love these people and I love these stories, I mean, maybe it's not for you, but I got to tell you, it is. We just got the rare 100% Rotten Tomato rating.
No.
Like saying like,
that's
yeah,
incredible.
100%.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you. TV Guide has come out over here and said it's one of the best shows ever produced. And it is. I mean, it's got it. And this is happening now in my life.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Goldbergs. Goldbergs is an institution here in America. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's a great show. I just finished doing 2 years on Silicon Valley, which I think they're showing in the UK.
It's a great series, Silicon Valley. Yeah, I love it.
Hilarious. All these things are happening to me now later in life, and I so appreciate it that I was able to do kind of iconic things in the past, like Groundhog Day and other things, and now I'm able to work with such great people, like on One Day at a Time and great scripts. I mean, really, it's amazing. I pinch myself all the time.
You know that there's a TV channel over here that every Groundhog Day, they show the movie Groundhog Day all day. All day. It's one of the Sky Channels. You know that, Carol?
Yes, I do.
It's one of the Sky Channels. They show it all 24 hours, Groundhog Day on a loop. Yes. Imagine.
And I have to remind the listeners here, when Groundhog Day came out, it was not that well reviewed. It got like 3 out of 4 stars.
Oh, did it? Or
3.5 out of 5 stars. It was like considered very good for a kind of run of for a typical Bill Murray movie.
Yeah.
And after the film had been out for like a month at the theaters, I get a call from our producer, Trevor Albert, and he said, "Stephen, we may have a hit." And I go, "Really?" He says, "Well, every week the box office keeps going up."
Wow.
"And it can't be the reviews, so it has to be word of mouth." And Ian, you want to talk about serendipity.
Yeah.
I think one of the miracles that's made Groundhog Day a classic and an evergreen is that we shot it in Woodstock, Illinois, and it was bitter cold when we shot it. And so everyone in the movie is wearing winter scarves and coats and hats. And so there is no fashion to go out of.
There you
know, winter clothing stays kind of the same.
Yeah.
But you don't have the shoulder pads. It's you don't funny. Have the weird hairdos. Everybody's all bundled up. And it's so it looks universal.
I feel like I'm treating you like I've got a rock singer on, and I'm just putting a quarter in and just getting you to do your greatest hits every time. But. The story that I heard, and I phoned Kath up and said, "Kath, you've got to listen to this episode. It's nuts." And then she phoned me back when she heard it, was when I think you were doing like what we call rep over here, like summer stock theatre. And is the guy called Vince, the ex-Marine cook? That you have
Vinny, the cook,
Vinny.
Yeah,
can we hear that? I mean, that is an incredible story.
Oh well, we had no one could be a cook at this. You have to understand this dinner, this theater. It wasn't a dinner theater. It was like, you know, we did the classics. We did Oscar Wilde, but we had like no real audiences. So the manager of the theater managed to hook up our plays with the local prison and also the local insane asylum. So we would do Importance of Being Earnest for prisoners, you know, and they come in rattling their chains. Is swearing legal on your station?
What does it begin with?
GDBS.
I think we can say that once. Yeah, go on.
Okay. So anyway, I'm playing Algernon in The Importance of Being Earnest, and not a laugh, not a single laugh, not a sound from the prisoners. You have to understand, this is one of the greatest plays ever crafted. It is one of the funniest plays, not a laugh. The curtain is coming down at the end of Act One, and all I hear is a lone voice coming from the audience. "How much longer we have to listen to all this goddamn bullshit?"
And you have to go back out again.
We have two more acts to do. We have two more acts to do. It was amazing. We did Midsummer Night's Dream for the insane asylum. And one of the young men in the front row, like when the fairies came out of the forest, I'm playing bottom, pulled his pants down and horrified all of us actors on the stage as he did what he was going to do on the front row. And we're freaking out backstage, and the head of this theater said, "Gang, just imagine you're performing for Shakespeare's audience." Shakespeare's audience. This is so anyway, you couldn't keep a cook at this place.
No.
We ended up getting this ex-Marine named Vinny.
Yes.
Vinny as the cook. And during Midsummer Night's Dream, Vinny was crazy. We're all in there. We all have different jobs to do at the end of cooking. And I see people kind of vanishing during dinner. And the head of the theater comes in to yell at us again. This is the guy who talked about Shakespeare's audience. He goes, "Vinny did not poison the onions. If anyone says Vinny has poisoned the onions, you could get your hat and coat and get the hell off the plate." And I'm thinking like, what do you mean poison the onions? What are we talking about? And I'm looking at my plate. I just had like a whole beef stroganoff with a bunch of creamed onions. And I'm thinking like, huh, you know, So it was my job to help wash the dishes.
Yeah.
So I go back into the kitchen, and there's the big pot of onions, and there's a box of rat poison on the shelf, open by the onions. I'm thinking, look. So I go talk to our technical director. I said, Tony, you know, I think maybe Vinny did poison the onion. And so we're all getting ready. The audience, if you call it that, starts showing up at the theater, and people start vanishing, and I start hearing people throw up all over the place. All the actors, this you have to imagine this sylvan scene, this theater existing in the beautiful mountains of upstate New York, now filled with actors running out into the bushes vomiting. So Al Maisel comes back saying, well, in the old tradition of the theater, the show must go on. He put vomit buckets on each side of the stage. Jesus. And so he says, just keep doing the play. And if you have to throw up, just work your way over to the vomit bucket, throw up, and keep going with the play. So I start getting terrible stomach cramps as bottom, which is a fairly sizable role, right before the play starts, and I begin puking. I'm sure your audience is at this point. So I am doing Bottom's Dream, and I'm looking out at the audience. They're still there. They're watching us like nothing. Like, this is no strange thing. Like, we have this actor on stage who's wandering over to one side of the stage, vomiting, continues with his speech, wanders over to the other side of the stage, vomiting, fucking keeps going, and they're still sitting there like it's normal. Now, some of the actors did not make it to the buckets. They just vomited on the back curtain. And the audience stays. They stay for the entire show. They applaud at the end. It was
amazing. Applaud. I would hope so.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Vinny vanished in the night.
Yeah.
And we have no idea what happened to Vinny as he tried to murder all of us.
Now, that brings us actually very smoothly to the man who refused to murder you.
Oh, no, listen, we'll have, if you don't mind giving us one more story, Stephen, because I could listen to you all night, but let's have one more, because okay. I read this and then I saw a video of you talking about this. This is incredible. Steven Seagal, who, let's be honest, now in 2019, very thick, dark, lustrous hair.
It's amazing.
I don't know what he's doing, but he's really looked after his hair. Very good genes. You were in a movie with him. You had to kind of wait for him to wake up before you could audition or something, didn't you?
Right. I had to audition for him at his house at 10 a.m. And his house, like, I live, if you know Los Angeles, I live in the San Fernando Valley. He lived over in Beverly Hills, so it was quite a drive for me. But I got over there in the morning, 10 a.m., knocked on his door. His housekeeper let me in. No Stephen to audition for.
No.
And I was told that he is still asleep. He slept till 12:30.
Oh,
no. So I waited in his living room. I waited in his living room for 2.5 hours before he comes down in his pajamas and said, so, you know, in this movie, you are a serial killer, but I really want to feel the emotion from you. I really want you to cry. Are you able to cry? I said, well, I feel like crying right now. I could cry for you right now. So anyway, I have to shoot my scene with Steven Seagal the first day of shooting.
Yeah.
And the number of times, now this is weird, Ian, the number of times in my career I have shot the first scene of a movie. Groundhog Day, Bill Murray and I began shooting that street scene the first crack of dawn of the first day.
Isn't that fun?
Same thing with Glimmer Man. So John Gray, our director, came up to me in a hurry before we start shooting. And he said, got problems, Steven. Steven Seagal says he doesn't want to kill you in the scene anymore. He doesn't want to be violent. I go, he doesn't want to be violent. He goes, yeah, the people at Warner Brothers were telling him, Steven, baby, boobala, you dance with who brung you. I mean, that's all you do.
You dance with who brung you.
That's You know, they don't hire you because you're a great actor. You kill people. That's what you do. It's like hiring Bruce Lee and telling him, don't do any kung fu. That's what you do. So they have Steven Seagal, and he comes in and he says, you know, I've been thinking. I think it's bad karma to be killing people in this movie. And John Gray is standing behind Steven, gesturing to me like, shut up, Steven, to me. Don't talk. Don't say anything. And I said, well, Steven, this is the way I see it. I see that actually you are helping my reincarnational development as a human being. I'm a serial killer in this movie. I'm in agony. My soul is in agony. But if you kill me like you're supposed to, you're actually benefiting me and mankind. And he goes, I like that. So we do the scene. I capture a priest. Steven Seagal kills me. He kills me real good. In fact, in the movie, they had set up this contraption to where he shoots me several times and my chest explodes.
Yeah.
And I fall out of frame. And Steven comes up with a smoking gun and looks down at me. And we cut out of that scene. So I think we're done. And then about 2.5 months later, yeah, I get a panic phone call from John Gray, the director. And he said, Steven, we have a problem. Steven Seagal has been ad-libbing in the rest of the movie saying, thank God I didn't kill that guy in the church. Is there any way you could come in?
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Oh, you missed some wicked ninja skills. I just remember it's Chris France, of course, is the drummer from the Talking Heads. And Jerry Harrison is the guitarist. I just remembered that. And then Catherine was so angry with me, just because of something I said. And she jumps to a fence very quickly, that she threw my Nurofen at me, and she threw them. I raised my headphones to put them on my head. The Nurofen bounced off the headphones, went straight into the bin.
No, into your bag.
Straight into the bag. That's what I meant.
Trick shot it was.
Okay. Okay, dear listener. Now, you know us, we like to... been on the hunt recently for new podcasts, and I think we've found some great ones. At 11 o'clock, Stephen Tobolowsky. Okay, go and Google him. You'll recognise him from so many films. He's been in over 200 movies, which is insane. He does a great podcast, The Tobolowsky Letters. Files. I discovered it at the weekend. I did four of them in a day, and they're like over an hour each. And it's great storytelling. Great, funny, insightful. The band Radiohead is named after him. I know, it's nuts. So we found some really good podcasts recently, and ages and ages ago, and it was a long, long time ago, I got an email from Chris Warburton, who's been on the show before, who was talking about the staircase murder. Was it a murder? Was it a raptor? Yeah, he murdered his... The guy murdered his wife. Not Chris Warburton. As far as I know, he's not been found guilty of any murders. No. Not been found guilty. There's the rub. And he sent me an email a while ago saying, I've got a new podcast out. If you get a chance, have a listen, and if you like it and you think I could come on the show, then please do. And as I do with all of my important emails, I go, I'll have a look at that when I've got a bit more time. Like 2 months went past, and suddenly, it's one of those moments, I woke up in bed at like 4 in the morning going, oh, shit, that email from Chris. Oh, God. And so I listen, and it is such a good podcast. We're going to play a little trailer for it. Wake Up to Waco, I think it's called.
No, it's not.
What is it?
It's called End of Days.
He should change the name. It's great. It's the story of the 20-odd, 29, I think it is, 20 something like that, British people that went over to Waco and got involved in the whole David Koresh thing. You can find it on iTunes, on the BBC iPlayer. I wouldn't bother going to BBC Sounds. It's a car crash of an app. You can get it on Acast, all your usual podcast places, right? And it's well worth listening to, and I know a lot of you have. Let's have a listen to the trailer for the podcast, and then we'll have a word with Chris about it. So here we go.
The Wackos of Waco would like you and me.
This podcast is the story of a cult. A cult from the middle of nowhere in Waco, Texas, convinced that God's final judgment was coming to the earth. And at its center, 30 people from Britain.
Really was just a cult group outside, out in the country out there.
This wasn't a little house on the prairie, all innocent and sweet. No.
The psychological
hold he had on some of those people was extreme. You know, they were brainwashed, pure and simple.
Why don't you learn the everlasting gospel? Why don't you believe Revelation 14? Why don't you fear God and give him glory?
There's a time I beg my daughter to leave the country. See for yourself. Let's leave this place.
Let's send them out of that house right now.
No.
The entire compound is just engulfed in flames.
I'm thinking, my sister's in there, my aunt is in there.
This is their unbelievable story. This is End of Days.
And it's great. I think there's 8 episodes. They're about half an hour, 40 minutes each, and it's an amazing story, and it's brilliantly told. And I believe we should have, fingers crossed, I never quite trust Skype. We've got Chris Warburton on the line now. Evening, Chris.
Evening, Ian.
Hey, listen, man, thank you so much for getting in touch about this, because this is a podcast that totally bypassed me. Some of my listeners pointed out it had been on Radio 5. Five Live at some point. Tell me about the background to this. Where did you get the story from? How did you land on this?
Yeah. So my producer, the guy who I made this with, the guy called Kieran Tracy, was the producer of it, and he just moved to Manchester, and he was on one of these guided tours of Manchester, and they went into the old coroner's court of the city. It's kind of deep underground. It was this very sort of old, very kind of very, very strange building. Yeah. Very evocative, I suppose, is the word I was looking for. And just as part of the tour, they said, oh yeah, and this is where the inquest for the British people who died in Waco took place. And he was like, wow. Okay, I didn't know there were that many British people. And then he started looking into it and basically found that about 30 British people went out there and 24 of them died out there. So then we started basically trying to put the pieces together as to when that cult first started coming into the UK. And then we discovered that actually David Koresh himself had come over here in about 1988-89 to a college in Berkshire, in Bracknell, which is such a, you know, it's so far removed from where this all ended in the prairies of Texas. And that's the sort of bit that just thinks, how did all of this happen? But basically, he came over there, had a load of Bible sessions at this college off campus. And then a bunch of the people who had gone to experience that then went back to their communities, if you like, in London, in Nottingham, and in Manchester, and word kind of spread. And I suppose the podcast was about us trying to follow that path, really, you know, follow that web as it gradually went out across the UK, and then trying to understand what encouraged those people to give up, you know, their pretty normal existence in the UK to decide to head out all the way to Texas.
Chris, listen, we're out of time. I'm so glad you sent me an email. Please send me an email with the next project that you do, because me and Kath absolutely love the stuff that you do. We think you're brilliant.
Good.
Kieran is
good.
Incredible as well. Let's be honest. Catherine, we all know the producer is the real brains.
Yeah.
Damn straight.
In these organisations.
Oh, yeah, 100%. We all know that.
It's if you want to find it, dear listener, it's End of Days. I've got the title right for the first time. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on the BBC iPlayer, wherever you normally get your podcast. There are moments of lightness in there and humanity and all of this stuff. We've made it sound very heavy and very dark. There are some very heavy, very dark moments. But it is a beautiful story. Beautiful, possibly the wrong word. But there are some very human stories that are beautifully told. Well done, Chris. Thank you so much, mate.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks a lot for having me on.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.